Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio! Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California!
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. You're not probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on his cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black dude, holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris. I got another big show for you guys. Opening week of football technically starts tomorrow. I'm definitely going to get into all those games and everything else. But before I do any of that, my special guest for this evening is former CZW World Heavyweight Champion, the Messiah. What's going on, Messiah?
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Good, good. figure we get you on, you know, haven't had you on before, and definitely got a lot of things to ask you. So I guess start out right from the start. How'd you actually get into wrestling?
It's pretty boring. I mean, it's just like everyone else, you know, grew up watching it, man, fell in love with it, and wanted to do it ever since I could remember. And basically, my dad took me to two wrestling shows my whole entire life. They were both at the LA Coliseum and the LA Sports Arena, and they had Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect on the undercard. And that was before Bret Hart became, you know, ex-champion. But dude, watching him wrestle, he and Kurt Hennig, you know, going hold for hold, which is actually kind of funny given the fact that I'm known for hardcore. But like they went hold for hold and everything. I fell in love with it, and that's when I decided, hey, I want to become a professional wrestler.
When did you actually start, deciding to get into it? Did you start with, like, a backyard thing, or did you go straight to a school?
I went straight to a school. I mean, as far as I knew back then, this was back in 96. It was just, you know, I did everything everyone else did. You know, I used to mess around with your buddies in the backyard kind of thing, but right out of high school, when I was 18, I went to, instead of going to college like I should have done, I went to wrestling school instead. And that's how I got into it.
Where'd you go? Where'd you train at?
It was a place called It was a place called Slammers University, or Slam U. And it was the guy who ran it was a guy named Vern Langdon. He actually was trained by, believe it or not, the Fabulous Moolah. And okay. The same place that Ed Ferreira, the ex-writer with Vince Russo, that's where he trained. And I met Ed there. And it was just like this hole in the wall, like a lot of places are. But back then, in 96, dude, the only thing I knew of any wrestling schools, because it wasn't like there was the internet or you could just, go through the yellow pages and look up wrestling school. The only thing I knew about a wrestling school was what I saw about the Ultimate Warrior on WWE. Mm-hmm. And so I actually tried to get information on his thing. And as a kid, I used to listen to this thing called Wrestle Talk Radio, which was just on some random channel out here in L.A. And Dynamite D, who wrestled in XPW, and unfortunately he passed away, but he was the radio host. So at like, I think like at 14 years old, dude, I was calling in asking questions on how to become a professional wrestler from Dynamite D, and he kept on plugging this place called Slammers University. Well, forward a little bit, when I turned 18, trying to find out how to become a professional wrestler, ended up, trying to look into Ultimate Warriors thing, which was just a big ripoff. My dad's the one who's like, hey, what about that Slammers place? And I called up, they were still in business, and Vern Langdon called me right back. He was like, hey, we got shows going on in Bakersfield, California. Every Thursday night we do shows, which is about an hour and a half from where I was. And we went down there, checked it out, and fell in love with it. And from that point on, I got into the wrestling school and never looked back.
What was the training like? Was it what you expected, or, did it catch you off guard, or any of the stuff that they were doing? Or
It was old school. They didn't smart me up. They didn't let me know anything about it because, I mean, the God's honest truth, the first lesson I ever got was how to bump. Just wanted to see if I could do the bump, which everybody knows. I mean, if you can't back bump, you can't wrestle. But you don't think about it when you're watching it as a kid, hey, I got to learn how to do this. You're completely teaching yourself how to fall. Everybody's instinct is when you're falling backwards is to turn around and try to see where you're landing. And a lot of people can't get it. For some reason, I was able to get a back bump on the first couple tries, which caught Vern off guard because, he told me straight up, he goes, a lot of people can't do that. And the second thing he taught me was he just chopped the crap out of my chest, man, black and blue. And it was just, and again, didn't smart me up on anything. And then after the lesson, he looked at me and he was just like, all right, so, you want to do this? I was like, yeah. I was like, all right. Because they were so used to all these couch potatoes getting in thinking, hey, I can do that. And then finding out that it's not what they think it is. Mm-hmm. And literally, dude, I think it was my third lesson. And the third lesson, he put me into the actual, beginner's class. And there was this TV show filming there called Hard Copy or something like that. And they wanted all the guys in the ring just beating the crap out of each other while the host was, doing some intro. And Vern goes to this guy named Carlos, who wrestled as Carlito Montana in XPW, who's basically my main trainer. It's the first time I ever met Carlos. He goes, Carlos, hey, take Billy over here and just lock up with him. He knows how to lock up, and he knows how to, do a slam. Other than that, he doesn't know anything else. So just, just take it easy on him. And Carlos looks at Vern and is like, yeah, okay, no problem. So as soon as they say action, Carlos knees me in the friggin' gut, kicks me in the gut, and then does a tiger bomb. Just friggin' picks me up and tiger bombs me. And that was it. And he later told me, he goes, oh, I knew you'd be good later on. I'm like, wait, how'd you know I'd be good? You friggin' just basically took me and slammed me into the mat. He's like, well, because you went with it. And even then they didn't smart me up. It wasn't until, I want to say, it wasn't really until my first match that I was smart enough on how things work. Even in training, it was like, dude, we were really punching each other. We were really kicking each other. I mean, because the mindset was, in order to learn how to work light, you have to learn how to work stiff. You got to be stiff. That's how I was taught. So, I mean, I went home with black eyes and everything, which a lot of guys in wrestling schools now, because they think they know how the business works, they go in there and it's just nice light punches and everything, or there's no chopping in class, which is bullshit. Just It's like, dude, just get in, you know. I was taught, dude, you know, friggin' like shoot wrestling kind of thing. And, yeah, man, it was actually, I mean, I wish everybody could have been taught the way I was taught, because I think you have a certain appreciation for the business. And at the same time, it really is, you know, it really is a case of the people who want to be there will be there. It's not as easy as they thought it would be.
Right.
And dude, when I started, there were so many people who came in thinking that they were just going to catch on to this thing, and then they just friggin' left within 2 weeks. And that's the one thing I think, you know, independent wrestling is full of right now, is just a lot of guys who see it on TV, and because they read the dirt sheets or whatever it is, they think that they can go in there and do it, when really they haven't really paid their dues like that. There's something to be said about someone who's able to pay their dues in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it soon after, you know, the training and everything that you went into XPW, or did you do some other local indies before that?
No, in fact, like, that was the one thing. There wasn't, as far as I knew, there really wasn't any indies around here. And at the same time, Vern, the guy who ran Slammers, it wasn't like he wanted his guys going to wrestle other places either. I actually was with Slammers for maybe like a year and a half, 2 years. And then Slammers kind of died down, and I was like 21, 22 years old by that point. And then I moved away for about 8 months to a year. I came back to California, and Slammers I don't think was running anymore. But then I kept in contact with Carlos, my old trainer. And then he and I were just talking on the phone one day, and he was like, hey, there's this thing going on called XPW, and your name was brought up a couple times. You know, people were asking where you were. He goes, and I didn't tell him anything because I didn't think he wanted me telling anybody your business. But he goes, dude, if you're interested, you know, maybe, you know, you can get your foot in the door here. And essentially that's how I went to a show and met with the guys backstage. And then the following week, I think it was like every Tuesday, like the guys, like they would meet in XPW for like a group meeting or a company meeting kind of thing. And they would train because they also trained in the same building. And I went there and trained, jumped in the ring. And then the first meeting, I think like Dynamite D and Carlos were like, yeah, could come, you know, you can be part of the meeting as well. Just come on in. And as soon as I sit down, everybody shuts up, and then Rob Black looks right at me and goes, you know, who the F are you? You know, just trying to be all intimidating. And then White Trash Johnny Webb looked at him and goes, no, he's good. No, he's good. No, trust me, he's good. Don't worry about him. And that's basically how it happens.
So how was it getting into XPW, like, you know, once you were there and blending with the locker room, you know, beyond that initial thing?
It was cool. I mean, I knew Supreme and Chaos previously from an independent show I had done maybe a year or so ago. It's the first time I ever met those guys. I did it with Carlos, and then I did another show with Ed Ferrara. And those guys were actually really cool. It wasn't, but I mean, at the time, it wasn't like we were chummy or anything like that. And then when I came to XPW, they recognized me, and I recognized them. Dynamite D was already there, who I had known from Slammers. He trained me my first couple sessions when I first started at Slammers, and then he left. And I knew Carlos. Actually, the majority of the guys there were Slammers guys. So I kind of knew the niche group. And it was great. Originally, when I went there, you know, like Rob Black and the management there, they wanted big guys. They wanted big muscle-bound guys. And as you know, most indie wrestlers aren't like that. Especially starting out, you know, they're just skinny kids who freaking will bump their butts off. And I was one of those guys. And so they ended up, they put me under a blue mask. And I think, and as a rep, White Trash Johnny Webb was like, oh, why don't we name him the Blunatic? And they had me jobbing out to Nicole Bass, taking the choke slam, and she was dropping me on my head.
Wow.
So it was like I wasn't doing anything, but the reason they had me under the mask, too, was because they didn't want to just throw me out there and get slaughtered, because apparently, you know, it was like, hey, no, this kid can work, so let's not just use him up and let everybody know who he is. And then they came up with the idea to put me in a tag team called the Moral Crusaders, Luke and Matthew, which was just supposed to be like Bible thumping brothers, these Bible brothers who would preach against XPW with all the sex and violence, but at the same time would cheat their, you know, would cheat. And right. they had a guy who they wanted to be, I was supposed to be Luke. Then they had a guy who's going to be Matthew. That guy like fell off the face of the earth. They couldn't find him all of a sudden. I guess he didn't want to wrestle or whatever it was. And then they kept me under the blue mask for a couple shows. And finally, I just had a meeting with the management and asked, hey, can I please get out of this blue mask and let me do the Mark Crusaders gimmick as a singles. And I can build it. And if someone comes along that fits the bill or that can be my tag partner, then there's your tag team. But let me get it started at least. And I'll never forget it because Supreme was in the meeting too. And Supreme had some clout. Supreme like had some weight there. And Supreme looked at Rob Black and was like, yeah, let him do it. Let him give it a try. And then Rob looked at me and he's like, all right, I'll let you do it. But if you up this off or if you screw this up, you know, this is the only chance you get. And I think it was the following week. As far as I knew, I was supposed to be Luke, the Moral Crusader. That's all I was supposed to be.
Right.
The following week, I was there for training, and out comes Rob Black, and he's like, hey, what's up, Jesus? What do you mean, Jesus? What are you calling Jesus? He's like, yeah, you're going to be Jesus. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to be Jesus. So originally, they wanted to call me Jesus. And then finally, it was then decided to call me Messiah, which to this day, I still friggin' hate. But like that's how I got, you know, the Messiah gimmick. And then obviously I did really well with it and just never got the tag part of that. But what's funny, the thing that's funny about the story is that fast forward a couple years, you know, 2 or 3 years, they end up doing the Moral Crusaders gimmick with a guy named Luke and Matthew. The guy who played Luke is now Luke Hawks.
Right. Alterboy Luke is his name, right?
Yeah, you went by Alterboy Luke, but Luke, I mean, now he goes by Luke Hawks, but Luke now, I mean, he's doing friggin' great for himself.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, wow. So how long was it before, because they had a lot of DVD distribution and stuff like that, were you aware of that when they got there, or was it shortly after you got there that they started with the distribution, or?
It was, when I worked there, because I ended up working for the office as well. But that was probably maybe a year after I want to say it was after maybe a little over a year since I started with XPW. Then I started working for the office. And the only reason I started working for the office was because at the time, you know, my side job, dude, I was a friggin' waiter. I was working at this place called Claim Jumpers. It was like a steak joint. But, dude, I'd come in, you know, you're supposed to be clean-shaven there and dressed nicely. Dude, I'd come in with gig marks on my head from bleeding, and I'd get sent home. And so I'd go to the office, and they'd look at me and go, you know, what are you doing here? I'm like, I got sent home, and I'm not making any money. You know, it's like I'm bleeding for you guys, but I'm getting kicked out of my real job. And finally the decision was made like, oh, Billy's a nice kid, which, I mean, they regret now. But Billy's a nice kid. Give him a job here. And that's how I got my job in the office there.
Okay.
But when I was there, dude, they were always, like, Rob Black had this obsession with, like, Paul Heyman and the ECW. Like, he wanted to do that. He wanted to be that. Because of his adult film connections and having distribution through those videos, like, he was able to make some connections, or he had connections to distribute the wrestling videos, like in, I can't remember the name, like, Suncoast Video and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
which
Suncoast,
at the time... Yeah, at the time was awesome for an independent promotion, because all you got was WCW and WWE, and ECW had just started getting their video distribution. Otherwise, everything was like through like RF video or something. And he ended up I forgot, it was pretty quick when I was there that they got a distribution deal, and it was in stores and everything. And when it was actually pretty cool. The box designs were awesome and everything, and and that's one of the main reason. Like you look at the box design, they had like Shane Douglas on there and Candido and Sabu. It was just because, dude, those guys are the ones that'll sell tickets. You know, those are the guys who will friggin' merchandise. So, but you know, it wasn't too long after. Like, you know, of course, I'll never forget. We were part of the distribution deal was like whatever units didn't sell, the company got to basically get reimbursed for whatever the distribution company was. They got their money back essentially. And
right.
I came into the office one day, and dude, there's like these friggin' boxes everywhere, and it's all XPW videos. And like Rob's like, well, what the hell is all this? And I think Kevin Kleinrock was just, these are the ones that didn't sell. These are the ones that, you know, they took off the shelf. We basically bought these back, and they were everywhere.
Oh, wow.
I mean, so, like, I think it was, like, three would go into a store, like, three videos or three of each kind of deal, and maybe
mm-hmm.
one would sell, but the other two, we XPW had to buy back. So,
oh, wow.
And then again, I might have
yeah.
that completely and totally wrong, but I just remember it being that way for some strange reason.
All right. Now, because it was such a big thing, you know, actually in Suncoast videos, and I mean, I'm from Jersey, so I had actually, you know, picked up XPW DVDs here and there because I'd seen Sabu and Big ECW Mark,
yeah.
So I was like, oh, well, let's see what's going on here. For the guys, you know, that were actually working the shows, was there a lot of pressure because it was such a big deal and not everybody was getting into the stores, or?
What do you mean, pressure on who,
perform and just.
Oh yeah, well of course, yeah. I mean, well, what's funny is like, you know, just speaking for myself, I never wanted, you know, I just wanted to wrestle. That's all it was. I mean, when
mm-hmm.
I first started wrestling, dude, I was paying to wrestle essentially, because that was part
right.
of my training to do a show. That was part of my training, so I was basically paying to wrestle my tuition dues, and. So I never in a million years thought I'd be on a cover box or be in a video game or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to wrestle. And, you know, part of, you know, the great thing, one of the great things about XPW was the fact that they brought in guys like Tracy Smothers and Sabu and Ken Dito and Axel Rotten and New Jack and all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great also was like, for the most part, most of the guys were all awesome. They were great. And if you wanted to, like, pick their brain on something, they'd be more than happy to, you know, give their 2 cents on something. And in some cases, for some of them, when you weren't asking for their 2 cents, they'd still put it in. But that was that was just the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, of course, like, you know, when you see Sabu or you see – I think the first guy I ever – well, the first main guy – not main guy. The first name guy I ever worked was Chris Candido. And Chris was awesome, man. He took me aside, and we came up with a match, and he had Tammy with him, and he and I are going over it and everything. And at the same time, I'm like, dude, this is freaking Chris Candido, man. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going back and forth of what we want to do. And then he goes over to Rob, and he tells Rob what the match is going to be. But if anybody knew Chris, like, Chris, when he got excited, he would stutter. and he would, like, and he could talk like a mile a minute, like, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he's telling Rob how the match is going to be, and Rob the whole entire time is just like nodding his head, yeah, okay, okay. And then, you know, and the finish, and we're done. And Rob's like, okay. Chris walks off. Rob looks at me and goes, did you understand that friggin' word that guy just said? Yeah, of course I understood it. But, like, he would hit all these points. Like, he would just talk so fast, you didn't understand what he was saying. And,
yeah.
Like the first lesson I ever got, dude, the first lesson I ever got, as far as, like, it really stuck, you know, sticks in my head when I was working Chris was that, because at the time, dude, even though I had been wrestling for maybe 3 years or something like that, dude, I wasn't wrestling any names. And in order to get better, you need to wrestle people who are better than you, which
right.
it doesn't
right.
happen a lot, you know, back then or today. And so stepping in with Chris, I was completely and totally intimidated. We were working and again, I might not be setting this up visually right, but essentially, you know, I'm working him on the ropes, and he's feeding me his hand, and I, you know, throw him across the ropes, give him a clothesline or something. He bounces back up, and then I start punching him again. Well, he's feeding me his hand to throw him against the ropes again or throw him in the turnbuckle, but he's feeding. I was never taught feeding. And so Tracy Smothers took me aside, and he's like, hey, Billy, when Chris was doing this, he was feeding to you. You know, you did great. It was an awesome match. You know, Chris is happy with it. You should be happy with it, too. I'm really, you know, he's like, I'm really impressed. You did well. But, you know, and he sat me down, and this is what you can do better, what you need to work on. And I never had that
mm-hmm.
before, really. Carlos
right.
was good. My trainer was good. But he wasn't like that. And I'll never forget that. And so being around guys like that, all of us, you know, Chaos, Supreme, everybody, like, we all wanted to friggin', you know, have our A game. But sometimes, you know, when you think you're doing great in the ring, you might be, like, doing dog shit, you know? And the biggest complaint that we got from like, those guys or someone like Sabu was like, dude, you're doing everything. You're essentially popping your, you know, you're doing every friggin' move you know in the book. It's like, slow it down. And I really took a lot of that stuff, all of us did. We took it to heart. But having those guys there teaching us, like, that was a great experience that hopefully, like, everybody gets something like that at one point in time in their career where they, you know, like, they should be like a sponge and just soak that knowledge in, man.
Right. Speaking of, you know, the different guys you had worked and stuff, you know, Sabu and Candido, New Jack was another guy. Did you, you know, have any previous knowledge of, like, the stuff he was doing and, you know, seeing what he was doing in ECW? Was there any, like, you know, nerves going into that thing? Because, you know, he's almost killing mass transit and everything else.
Dude, okay, dude, I'll tell you something. I didn't know about mass transit. I had no idea. I didn't know. I mean, I knew who New Jack was, of course. And here in L.A., I think ECW would come on, like, at 2 in the morning on a Saturday night. And I knew who New Jack was. But New Jack, for some reason, like, the match or the show that I wrestled him on, he came in, like, maybe 2 days earlier or something like that. So he was at the XPW offices. And New Jack would, you know, he tells people this, like, he would go there and he would get porn, you know, like they would give him porn. And so, you know, he'd go in and he's like a kid, you know, kid in a candy store, but we'd go in the main office and they had like this huge big screen and he pulled out, he had the mass transit incident on VHS and we put it in and we're watching it. Dude, I didn't know anything about it. And then I'm watching it. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then New Jack is basically telling, you know, giving the play-by-play what happened and why it happened and everything. So, you know, I had no idea. Now, fast forward to when I do the match with him, he's just pacing. He's pacing back and forth. And right before we go out, like, there was a spot I wanted to do with him. And, you know, so I go up to him. I'm like, hey. And it's the only thing that we called. It was the only thing that we called in the match. And it was just... hey, I got the spot I want to do with you. I take the guitar, you know, I try to play the guitar, and then you grab it and you hit me with the guitar. That was it. And New Jack looks at me, he's like, yeah, okay. Up until that point, he's backstage and he's just having a good old time, and he's being funny and everything, but for some reason, that point in time, dude, he's just stone-faced, and he's like pacing back and forth like a wild animal in the cage, and I'm like, dude, this guy's going to freaking kill me. Holy crap. What, we get in the ring, and dude, he was so light. Just, you know, the first punch, boom, you know, completely and totally light. So, I mean, it's just funny, like, even like someone like Sabu, you completely and totally scared the, well, actually, the first match I ever had with Sabu, he totally stiffed the shit out of me. But he did it on purpose. I understand why he did it. The other matches I've had with him since then, he's the lightest guy in the world. You know, it's just funny, like, you know, they build up these reputations and everything, and you know, I finally get in there with him and you get to see how people work, you know, or, you know, people have these, you have these conceived notions of how someone is going to be or how they're not going to be. And just to actually get like a personal one-on-one with some of these guys was friggin' awesome. So it was awesome just to be around those guys and learn from them and get, you know, get the crap kicked out of me by them as well.
Yeah. Now, you know, amongst that time, you know, in XPW, like you said, you came up, you know, watching Brett and Mr. Perfect and stuff. So when did it actually, you know, cross your mind that you wanted to get into hardcore deathmatch stuff? And
I didn't want to. like I said, you know, The match that made me fall in love with wrestling and want to become a professional wrestler was watching Kurt Hennig and Bret Hart. And it's a match no one's probably ever going to see. It was just on a house show. But they were going hold for hold, and they went to a 15-minute draw. And I remember my dad just looking at me, and because he saw the look on my face, and he was just like, you know, you okay? That was the match. when I fast forward to like the first ECW pay-per-view, my trainer Carlos and myself and I got invited to Ed Ferrara's house to watch it. And you know, prior to like at Slammers, Ed and Carlos were like the cool kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So to get invited by them, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool, please, yeah. And so I went there, and then they had, like, I think it was the last match, if I remember right. I think Terry got wrapped in barbed wire. Someone got wrapped in barbed wire or something like that. But the idea got floated out, just like, hey, it would be cool to do a hardcore match, not a death match. Hey, it'd be cool to do a hardcore match just to say I did it once. And that was it.
Yeah.
Then you fast forward to XPW, and all of a sudden they're doing their first deathmatch tournament, and, you know, talking to Carlos and everything, and, you know, at the time, you know, watching some of the deathmatch stuff, and, you know, Funk and Cactus and Onita and all those guys, it's like, you know, it'd be cool to say I did it once. That's really what it stemmed from. I wasn't like Supreme, who likes doing that stuff. He'll tell you he likes doing it. It was like, hey, let me try it once. All right, cool. Well, me just being me and being taught the way I was taught, like, I went balls out on it, you know? And
yeah.
In essence, it was like too good for your own good kind of thing. And then all of a sudden in XPW, it was like me and Supreme and, like, you know, like the Go Funk Yourself death match and all this stuff. And hell, when I went to CZW, I had discussions with Zanding about it. And Zanding's like, well, you're known for thumbtacks. I'm like, how the hell am I known for thumbtacks? I freaking hate the things. He goes, you hate thumbtacks? I'm like, dude, I hate them. I don't. Where is this crap coming from that I like? I like thumbtacks. Dude, I freaking hate the things. And so it really was just I was good at doing it. It wasn't like I enjoyed doing it. It wasn't like I wanted to make a name off of doing that. You know, I got no complaints. I'm not gonna complain about any of it. And it's not like I want to turn back the hands of time and wish I was known for something else. But, you know, dude, just my personality, the way I was taught, you're going to do it. Don't do something half-assed. And that's essentially like what happened.
Yeah. And then you more or less get typecasted into that role, huh?
Yeah, oh, totally. Totally. And, Sabu said it long ago. Like, I remember, I forgot, someone was asking him, maybe it was Rob or something, or so someone was just, you know, going there, and New Jack said the same thing. It essentially was, you know, I can do this, or, you know, New Jack's like, I can wrestle, I can do this, but they're not paying to see me do that. They're paying to see me, you know, do this instead. And, you know, Sabu would say, you know, dude, no one wants to see me friggin', you know, have a headlock for friggin', you know, 10 minutes. You know, they want me to do this, 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 and this, and this. And in a way, it's kind of like people expect certain things out of you. And
yeah,
I kind of got, you know, people expecting me to do things, but at the same time, I still had a good, pretty good base or fan base, especially out here and also in CZW, but where people would like, you know, hey, you know, Masai, he can wrestle, give him a chance, he can wrestle, you know, he can wrestle. And unfortunately, like, the matches that I had with, like, Super Dragon or Chris Daniels, some of the other, like, dude, you're not going to see him because they happen in federations or they happen in promotions that were, you know, around for two shows.
Yeah.
It's like no one's going to see any of this stuff, and you know, the stuff that is out there on YouTube and everything is like the hardcore stuff, which, you know, I got no complaints about that because, you know, it could not be, you know, it couldn't be out there, and then, you know, why would you be talking to me? But
right.
Yeah, there was no game plan to like, hey, let me do this or that. It just kind of, you know, I fell into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. How did the whole, I guess, the fallout with XPW, how did that all come about and what happened?
The question everybody asks.
yeah.
It was, no, it was, I mean, it's essentially what, you know, even after like 10 plus years, 11 plus years, like, I'm still trying to be delicate with this crap and I don't know why, but... It was,
yeah.
He's
kind of like,
yeah,
playing Chris Candido.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, basically, you know, it had to do with Lizzie and that. But also, there was some tension building up between Rob and I for a while. There really was. To the point where, maybe a week before I got fired, I yelled at him. Like, I yelled at him. And as soon as I was done yelling at him, I knew I shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I crossed the line from employer and boss. And, it just shouldn't have happened. And at the time, I had a lot of stuff going on in my life that had nothing to do with wrestling. And,
right.
Yeah, dude, it was just a bad scene all around. And then essentially I got fired. And it did, you know, it had to do with Lizzie. I'm not going to try to hide that fact. But when it went down, it basically, you know, it was one of these things, dude, I knew it was coming, you know. And when it happened, though, I basically got fired from, you know, the promotion that I was heavyweight champion and deathmatch champion of, and I got fired from my regular day job.
All right.
So,
yeah.
You know, essentially in one day or in 1 hour, whatever you want to call it, like, everything that I worked on and worked for was just gone. And to be honest with you, when that happened, dude, I didn't want to wrestle. My body had taken a beating, and at one point, like, I even tried quitting XPW, and we were at Rob's house or whatever watching a pay-per-view, and I had the belt with me, and I'm like, dude, I'm done. Like, at the time, like, my back was killing me. I was just in pain. And, obviously I didn't quit then, but, it was a bad scene all around. And the one thing I regret more than anything was that guys like Supreme and Chaos and even Dynamite D, guys who were my friends, were kind of put in the middle of that. And, when that all happened, it was just like, you know, they didn't know, like, you know, I remember Chaos, like, hey, do you want me to quit? I'm like, no, I don't want you to quit. Like, dude, just freaking stay. And that's the one thing, and I've told this to people before, the one thing I am completely and totally proud of myself about regarding my wrestling career, if you want to call it that, is that I've never buried anybody to the office. I've never tried to get somebody fired. I've never tried to blackball anybody. As far as I'm concerned, you're going to either make it or not make it on your own merit. You know, I'm not going to go in there and you know, try to sabotage something. And I know that's been done to me, where people have tried to friggin' talk behind my back and not get me hired someplace, or just try to get me fired when I was at a place. And that's the one thing I am proud of. Like, I've never done that. If anything, I've gotten guys work, you know, or hired. Like, I was able to get the backseat boys like Trent, Johnny, even Adam Flash, Wisebeater, got them to work in California. And I'm really proud of that. Those two things, being able to get guys work and not friggin' blackballing people, because that's the one thing I friggin' hate more than anything. Just people who shit talk people and just try to friggin', you know, take, you know, food out of their mouth. You know, guys who are busting their butt trying to, like, make a name in this business, and you got someone who's jealous of them or they don't like them, and because of that, they think that gives them right to friggin' go to the office and not get that, or and talk crap and not get that person, you know, hired or get work. Dude, let people get fired or hired on their own merit, on their own work ethic. You know, I mean, whatever. Right. Sorry to go on a rant on that. But it's like,
no,
that's the one thing that gets under my skin about this business, is that, dude, just people undercutting people, man. Like, I freaking hate that.
Yeah. How did it come about that you got into CCW? How did you get in there? And
Actually, when I was in XPW, we didn't know anything about CCW. We just knew that was that hardcore or really hardcore fed on the East Coast. And I think it was when XPW did their second annual deathmatch, Supreme won, but dude, like, the ring, it looked like a war zone. And I remember Rob just looking at me and going, can you imagine doing this every show? I'm like, hell no. He goes, dude, CZW does this every show. And that was the only thing that was ever set, as far as I know, about CZW. Fast forward to when I got fired, I did a couple indies here in California, nothing big or anything like that. And I think I got fired from XPW in the summer. And then I want to say December, January, dude, I was home, and the phone rang, and I was screening my calls, and I heard this voice go, hey, yo, Billy, Messiah. Sorry, I'm doing a really bad John Zanning impersonation. But
right.
I thought it was this guy named Jake Lawless from XPW playing a rib on me. He goes, yeah, this is John Zandig, GZW, give me a call. And I picked up the phone. I said, hello. And he's like, hey, is this Billy? I'm like, yeah, how's it going? This is John Zandig. And it's taken me forever to get a hold of you. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, I got a show. Why, what's up? He goes, well, I want to bring you in to face our champion, Justice Payne. And I knew nothing. I didn't know who was in CZW. I knew nothing of CZW.
Right.
Except for what I knew from the wrestling magazines that XPW were in. And so I told John, I'm like, yeah, I'm booked for this promotion called MPW, but let me call the booker. Let me see if I can get out of it. He's really understanding. And let me give you a call back. And I called MPW, and the booker over there was a guy named Logan Xavier. And he fully understood. He's like, no, dude, CZW is a great opportunity for you, man. No hard feelings. We'll get you back over here next month. I was like, okay. So I called John, told him I can do the show. The very next day, or was it the 2 days later or the very next day, I was on a plane heading to Philly. And that's essentially how I got into CZW. As far as I knew, it was a one-shot deal for CZW. I mean, they wanted me to come in, the guy from that other Fed in L.A., and have Justice Payne go over on me as their ex-champion to make him look stronger, which is completely and totally a good booking decision. I think Z-Bar picked me up from the airport, then I got dropped off at Nick Gage's house, and I stayed at Nick Gage's house, but when I got there, I just asked Nick. I didn't know Nick Gage and Justice Payne were brothers. And so I asked Nick, I'm like, hey, do you have any tapes on Justice Payne? He was like, yeah, I got a bunch of them. So basically I spent that night until 4 in the morning watching Justice Payne matches so I can get a feel for what he does.
Right.
And so basically the next day I met Payne and we did the match. And in the locker room, John looked at me and he was like, hey, you want to come back? I was like, yeah, I'd love to come back. And that's what happened.
Yeah, that was Open Challenge. That was, I think, February 2002.
Yeah, and
or January.
Like I said, by all accounts, it was supposed to be like a one-shot deal, but I got lucky. Like, and I'll put that matchup against anybody, only because of the mere fact of for two guys who never met each other, who didn't know anything about each other, to go out there and do what we did, and I'll watch the match now. I mean, I'll pick apart things here or there. But to have two guys who don't know anything about each other to do what we did and then to get over the way I got over, and, I mean, hopefully this doesn't come off like I'm trying to brag or anything like that, but...
No,
that wasn't supposed to happen. I just know it wasn't supposed to happen. And, I'll be forever grateful to, Zandig and CZW. And from what I was told, I think the two guys who really pushed me on Zandig to bring in were Payne, Justice Payne and John Dahmer. And the one thing I will say is that about the XPW and the video distribution and all that stuff, dude, when I went into that locker room, there were guys there, and they won't admit it now, and I won't name them, but there were guys there that were marking out for me, which I thought was completely and totally weird.
Right.
Because, essentially, I was on a video that was at a Suncoast in their mall. That's how much weight
right,
I carried, which is funny. I mean,
it
really is funny. But... there were guys that they were like, oh, man, you're good. Are you? It's so good to have you here, man. It's great. Yeah, thanks, man. All that match you had with Sabu or the match you had with Candide, it's actually a really weird experience for me because I went in there shaking everybody's hand like I was taught, And Adam Flash, if you ever talk to him, dude, he'll tell you he freaking hated me right off the bat. He's like, who the hell is this guy? He had no idea who I was, what I was doing there. Why is this guy in the main event? And, luckily I won the old man over. But, I was only supposed to be there for one time, man.
Wow. The incident and everything that happened with your thumb, what exactly went down there? I know, the story was told a bunch of times, but...
No worries, man. It's... Like I said, the story's been told a million times, but essentially... No, it had to do with Rob, whether anyone's going to admit that or not, there's another case, but it totally had to do with Rob. What people want to speculate is say that it had to do with Lizzie, and maybe it does, But honestly, in my opinion, the whole Lizzie aspect of it is very, very, very small. What it had to do with is friggin' Rob thinking he was disrespected. That's just my opinion. Because I was fired from XPW a year before I got attacked. All right?
Right.
Within that year, dude, I'm in CZW, and I'm doing really well for myself. I'm making a name for myself outside of XPW. And the one thing that the management in XPW friggin' hated was anybody. And this has to go with the adult side, too, the adult film side. Because they had contract guys, and they had contract girls like Lizzie and like Christy and Jessica. But if you left the company and did well for yourself, like, they hated it. They just freaking hated it because you were supposed to have the XPW or the Rob Black machine behind you pushing you. And without that machine pushing you, you shouldn't be able to do well. Well, I did pretty freaking well for myself without having that machine behind me. And and at the same time, dude, I was probably freaking just a cocky little shit back then, too.
Right.
Like, I made it well known. I did not like the management in XPW. Basically, like, a week prior to the attack, I did a show out here in Cali, and Mondo, Sick Nick Mondo, was actually on the show. He wrestled a B-boy. But that night was some XPW show that they were doing in a bull ring or something. It was an exploding death match thing, I think. I'm not sure.
Right.
But GQ Money. The night before, I went to a party at Dynamite D's house, and GQ Money was there, and a bunch of the guys were there, and we were talking. And he gave me and Mondo friggin' tickets to go to the show. And I was debating whether or not to go, and I'm like, I don't want to go. But, you know, I'll go and show the boys support. I'll sit up in the balcony, nosebleed section where no one will see me, whatever. Well, end up going to the show, and I knew I shouldn't have gone to the show, but end up going to the show with Mondo. And Mondo being Mondo, dude, he's just like walking around the front row and everything, getting recognized. And I was up in the nosebleed section just trying to mind my own business. But, dude, right from the get-go, as soon as I get there, the ticket taker was a guy who works for Rob, his bookkeeper. And he's like, what the hell are you doing here? And I was just like, dude, I'm here to see the greatest wrestling show on earth. And he's like, you're not going to cause any problems. I'm like, dude, I'm not causing any problems. I'm just here to watch the show. To show the guy support. That's it. That's all I'm doing. Keep in mind, GQ Money gave me that freaking ticket for free, dude. So, going to the show, and of course, I'm getting recognized here and there. But for the most part, dude, no one's saying anything to me. No one is paying attention to me. And then I get a call on my cell phone from Dynamite D, essentially just saying, dude, you need to leave. I'm like, what do you mean I need to leave? He goes, dude, you're causing a disturbance. What do you mean I'm causing a disturbance? Dude, I'm up here minding my own business. I'm not doing anything. Well, they're back here, pissed off and running around. I'm like, dude, this is ridiculous, man. I'm just here to watch the show and show you guys support. That's it. And I tell D, I'm like, fine, I'm going to leave. But as I'm walking out, and this is just me and my stupid pride getting to me, and me not being able to keep my mouth shut, I ended up calling Kevin Kleinrock on his cell phone. His wife answered, and I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have done it. But essentially, like, I yelled at her, just telling her to tell Kevin, to have Kevin to tell Rob, dude, leave the guys alone. They're not doing anything. If you're pissed off at somebody, you'd be pissed off at me, dude, but, dude, don't blame this on the boys. And that was it. I mean, I didn't call them any names or anything like that, but, it was just a stupid phone call I shouldn't have made. And the very next day, I get a call from White Trash Johnny Webb. And Webb is like, because that night you wrestled Shane Douglas. And Webb had a messed up knee. Like, his knee was really screwed up. But, I was honest. I'm like, no, the match sucks. Well, dude, he could barely walk on his knee, the poor guy. So he's like, oh, I heard you didn't like the match I had. I was like, yeah, well, no, it wasn't good, dude. He's like, well, my knee was fucked up. And I was like, I understand. But, I don't mean to, talk bad about you or anything like that. I just thought you could have done better. he's like, okay, well, you know, whatever. He goes, but just the reason I'm calling is Rob is really pissed. I'm like, oh, okay, what do you mean Rob's really pissed? No, he's really pissed, like more than usual pissed. Like he's talking about doing stuff like, you know, Rob likes to, you know, talk, but he's going beyond. I'm like, whatever, dude, you know, he's just doing his usual, you know, BS routine where he just yells and curses and threatens. And
yeah.
He was just, no, dude, no, this is different. So Webb gave me the heads up. And basically, you know, the next week is when everything happened. Or not, was it the next week? Yeah, like the following weekend is when everything happened to me, when I got attacked. So when those two guys came in, I knew why they were there. I completely knew why they were there. But my roommate was there. And for a brief second, I was like, wait, you know, are you with Michelle? But yeah, dude, I knew they weren't. And she was about to walk the dog. I'm like, hey, Michelle, why don't you go walk the dog? And she looked at both guys. She's like, okay. And door closed. And through the TV screen, I could see them jump me. And I mean, that's basically it. The one thing I'll say is, because I've never really told anybody like that story as far as like Webb calling me. I've never really evolved to that. But, you know, like Kevin's big thing is like, you know, if Rob had anything to do with it, why was he never questioned or why was anything? The main reason he was never questioned was because the friggin' sheriff's department were told to lay off Rob because Rob was going through his obscenity trial thing.
All right.
Because I had a couple discussions with the sheriff's department about it. And at the same time, it wasn't like I was, you know, hey, you got to catch this guy. In fact, I was probably, if anything, they were calling me all the time to check up on me because as far as I was concerned, it was done, it was over with. I didn't want to relive it, whatever. And I was just basically told under no circumstances, like, hey, yeah, we could bring Rob in here and talk to him, but what is he going to say? No, I had nothing to do with it. There was no physical evidence linking him to anything or to anybody, basically. And at the same time, he, you know, I was told that the sheriff's department was told to leave him alone. So, again, I mean, as far as I was concerned, the biggest FU I could give to whoever did that to me was just to continue on with my life, to continue wrestling, doing everything on my own terms, which is exactly what I did. So, I mean, there you go.
Now, when they, you know, when they came in there, was that what they were specifically looking to accomplish? Or, I mean, were they, you know, were they trying to kill you?
I really couldn't even tell you if they were trying to do that. I don't know. But, yeah, nothing was stolen. Nothing was taken. They were there just to friggin' rough me up. And in the process, I ended up breaking one of the guy's arms.
Okay.
But yeah, they tried everything in their everything in their power to knock me out. You know, they took a fish tank and hit me over the head with the fish tank and just beating the crap out of me. And at one point, you know, they were just like, "Stay down, just stay down, just stay down." They couldn't understand why I wasn't staying down.
All right.
You know, and I told this to everybody too. Dude, since it's happened, dude, I mean, like, I've gone on with my life. I've, you know, I continue to wrestle, continue to do things on my own terms. You know, it's not like I don't have any nightmares about anything. You know, the only time I ever talk about it or if I ever think about it is when, you know, I do a podcast or anything like that, in a discussion like this.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, dude, you know, F you to, you know, Rob and those guys, whoever did this, because, dude, I know, you know, when I compare my life to theirs, dude, I'm way better off than they ever will be, so.
Sure. Now, within, you know, all that time working CZW, you became more of a mainstay. Soon after, became pretty clicked up, I guess, kind of dream match situation with Nick Mondo. How was it that you guys kind of came together? And I mean, as a fan, we really wanted it and seemed to come together chemistry wise really well between you two.
Yeah, I mean, it was just something that the CZW booked. again, I don't want this to be sound disrespectful, but I didn't know anybody in CZW. I didn't know who Nick was until I got there. And then, you know, saw that he was crazy and was incredibly talented. So working him was awesome. And because he and I were similar in a lot of ways with the way we worked. And so working with him was awesome. The match I had with him out in L.A., in Epic, I really wish that match could have been done in CZW because that match, I mean, I was super proud of that match. I know Nick was as well. In fact, that match happened after the XPW death match thing that I went to that I was given the free ticket to, and then he and I put on our match, and as far as the SoCal fan crew, they were really high on that match, and again I don't want it to sound like I'm trying to like brag or anything, but the SoCal fans were really behind that match and were like, hey, you know, you guys in XPW, you could learn something from Mondo and Messiah kind of thing. And then, you know, like a week or like the next week or something like that, I got attacked or whatever it was. That's what I mean by like, it was just being able to go out there and do stuff on my own terms and, you know, make my way on my own, you know, name, not having someone push me to the moon or you know, that's...
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of that heat came from regarding Rob. And again, to go back to your other question regarding like the attack and why it happened. In my heart of hearts, the reason I think that really happened had nothing to do with Lizzie. Had to do with the fact that I was doing well on my own and I wasn't scared of Rob.
Yeah.
And I made it well known that I wasn't scared of him. It was just my mouth got me in trouble, essentially, and my attitude got me in trouble. So, and when I say in trouble, it's like I did anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. So saying I got in trouble is wrong. But that's where I honestly believe the whole thing stems from, is just me doing well by myself, kind of, you know, but whatever.
Right.
But going back to Mondo, you know, being able to work with guys, because that's the one thing I will say, like Tapes of Justice Pain, the first thing I put in was Cage Death 3 from CZW. Cage Death 3. And every match from top to bottom on that show was friggin' awesome. And, at the ECW arena, and the place is sold out. And all I can remember thinking was, what am I doing here? Because the East Coast style to the West Coast style that I was used to were completely, totally two different things, man. No one was working like they were in CZW or on the, you know, New Jersey or Philly, the way these guys were working, like, you know, we weren't doing that in XPW. As far as I knew, no one was really doing that in California. So walking into I was super intimidated, you know. But, you know, and Mondo was one of those guys who just stuck out when I watched Cage Death 3, you know, from his look to the way he worked, and especially to the fan reaction.
Yeah, he was super over.
He was super over. I mean, he could do no wrong. So, you know, having the opportunity to work with him, and I think he and I only worked two matches, I mean, single matches. We did stuff other than that. But, you know, the two single matches we had, I think, were pretty memorable in my mind. And, you know, I'm proud of both of them.
Yeah, definitely. The Epic, I don't know exactly what happened with that company, but they seem to have a pretty good thing lined up. They had Trent and Ruckus over there. I think that was the one.
I was able, again, when I said I'm proud of being able to get guys work, like, I was able to get them over there and put in the word and essentially, well, the owner asked me, hey, dude, you know, I want to bring some guys from CZW. Who should I bring? And he said, you know, these are the two guys I want to bring. I'm like, yeah, bring them. They're awesome, you know? And, it was just, you know, it was a good opportunity for everybody, but just like most indies or most feds or whatever you want to call it, you know, it just, you know, faded away like most of the promotions I've ever wrestled for.
Now, do you think it was the Epic thing and, you know, combination of that and, you know, his jealousy for you still doing well that brought Rob to want to bring XPW to the East Coast and, you know, battle CZW?
No, not at all. I won't say I had anything to do with that. They always wanted to do that. XPW always wanted to go. Bubba Ray or Bully Ray used to come to the XPW offices, and he would talk, and, you know, I remember him telling Rob one time, like, hey, dude, no, you need to go to Philly now. You need to go now. Because it's when right. ECW was done. You need to go now. And I do think ECW going or XPW going out to ECW Arena, it was a combination of things. I mean, maybe if I did have anything to do with that, it was a very small portion. But the fact that, you know, indie wrestling really is, I mean, it's indie wrestling for me, as much as I love California and the guys out here in indie wrestling, but indie wrestling, when I think of indie wrestling, I think of, like, the East Coast. I think of Jersey and Philly and, you know,
right.
Delaware. Like, all that. That's where all the talent, you know, a good portion of talent is. And I think also, you know, XPW having all the old ECW guys, it's like, dude, we got to go to the ECW arena. You know? And
yeah.
What's funny to me is, when we ran Cage of Death, when CZW ran Cage of Death 4, it was me and Just Payne in the main event, and Zandig and Lobo in the cage. We
right.
ran, and we had that place sold out, completely
mm-hmm.
sold out. XPW ran the following week. I think they had like 200 people there.
Yeah.
And they had all the ECW guys, you know. I think that speaks volumes
mm-hmm.
to what, you know, the fans wanted, but I think it also speaks volumes as far as it shows what XPW didn't know.
Right.
And then after that, all of a sudden, you know, I think they had Pain by, no, they didn't have Just as Pain then. Then all of a sudden,
yeah.
it's, you know, they grab Just as Pain and they get, Josh Prohibition and
Dog, Tony. Yeah.
And then they're pulling that, instead of going after, you know, name guys, quote unquote, then they start going after indie guys, you know, well-known indie guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the one thing I will say was, like, it was cool at the time because, if anything, you know, XPW coming in, trying to do their hostile takeover thing, it brought all the other guys together, you know, all the other promotions
yeah.
together. And unfortunately, and I tell this to everybody, when it comes to XPW, I have no heat or I have no ill will towards the boys. I mean, hell, I have no ill will towards the management. I really don't. I could care less about what they do or
all right.
what happens to them. But, you know, for guys like Supreme and Chaos, unfortunately, being part of XPW carries this stigma, unfortunately. And I don't
mm-hmm.
know why. And it really, the stigma comes from the management there, not the guys who work there. And, you know,
right,
it's
yeah.
like, you know, unfortunately, like, when Chaos was in CZW, dude, Chaos is complete, so, I mean, the guy is completely talented. When he was in CZW, even though I messed with him a little bit about it now, you know, he went in there not as, like, Chaos the Rock superstar. And he should have. He should have gone out there with the music and been the annoying guy like he was. That's what he should have done. But he went out there, still worked his ass off, but he wasn't that guy. And
right.
I don't think he got a fair shake in XPW, or not XPW, in CZW.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because he had a crappy match with me, I don't know, or whoever, but he, you know, it just, being part of XPW for some strange reason, and I'm lucky enough that, you know, I'm not labeled that XPW guy, but like Supreme and Cass, like especially those two guys, it's like you just carry the stigma. You know, a guy that like Luke Hawks, like Ultra Boy Luke, dude, he's done
mm-hmm.
well for himself. He's gotten, but he dropped the gimmick. He got rid of it. He didn't want it, you know.
Right.
For some strange reason, like, hey, you're that XPW guy. It's like it's a bad thing, and I don't know why.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's possibly the management. I know when you know, XPW came to the East Coast, definitely, you know, as a CZW fan and I know, like, ROH fans and stuff, they saw it as not just another company coming in, but a company trying to come in and run these home feds out. So it wasn't,
yeah,
it wasn't like, all right, come over, we love more wrestling. It was like, whoa, whoa, they're trying to kill what we like. So,
yeah, and unfortunately, it wasn't like XPW presented themselves as, hey, we're an alternative, we're going to bring you guys you haven't seen. It was, yeah, we're, like you said, we're running everybody out. It's a hostile takeover. No one's ever going to be able to work here, or, you know, kind of thing. And that just didn't fly out there, man. You know, it's
right.
It just, I mean, it is where it is, you know, but whatever.
Yeah. The High Five, when that was formed, it was a great stable. I mean, you had all the talent in the world with the back seats and B-Boy and Flash and yourself. And then, you know, with the High Five with High and then the, you know, Roman numeral B, you know, automatically,
yeah.
You know, heal, you got the HIV chance. I mean, it was a really good stable and well put together. Who came up with the whole thing?
Actually, where that came from was, it was right around when XPW, they took over the arena and CZW was kicked out. We were running at wherever that, the building that was right next to the strip club.
The bathrooms
yeah.
flooded into the
yeah, yeah.
first row. Right.
Yeah. There was like, in the locker room, there was like this little crack in the wall and you could see into like the girls' strip club, like locker room in there.
Nice.
It's when we were working there, but it's right after Payne left. And I think that night I was working Nick Gage. And John or Zandig was talking to me, and he was just like, you know, we don't have a heel. We got a bunch of faces. Like, essentially, like, Nikki was a face, I was a face. Zandig was a face. Like, everybody, all the single guys that I would be wrestling were all faces. Mongo was a face. And so I just looked at John, and I swear, it was like this. I looked at John and go, You want me to go heel? And he goes, heel? And he goes, no, they love you. I'm like, yeah, but I can make them hate me too. He's like, oh, well, let me think about it. And I just floated an idea by him. I said, well, here, you know, I had the CZW title and the Iron Man title. So my thinking was, hey, you know, I have both belts. Now it's like, you know, I got a big target on my back. So now it's, okay, you know, these are mine. It was just a quick sell to him, like, dude, you know, both these titles are mine. I don't want to lose them. So then I start cheating or, you know, that's how, you know, that's why I'm a heel, because I don't want to lose these, or why I turn heel. And he's like, all right, let me think about it. And I think it was like the second match before mine, he just comes up to me and he goes, all right, go heel. I was like, oh, okay. And then he goes, no, I got the, and then later on he comes, he goes, hey, I'm going to pair you with Trent and Johnny, because we were going to turn Dewey, the Hate Club's manager, anyway. We'll pair you with Trent and Johnny. That way, you know, those are your guys that are watching your back. And I'm like, okay. And essentially that's how it happened. It was just that quick. And then that night I walked out, and I mean, when I think about it now, I would have done it a little bit differently. But when I walk out, dude, I was a heel, or I was acting heelish. When I really shouldn't have been, it should have been just like, you know, I turned at the end, or at the end of the match. But, you know, whatever. But when John's like, you know, go heel, I'm like, oh, okay. So I went out there, did it. And then the back seats, I think, interfered in the match. And then they got paired with me. And then B-Boy came the following month. The following month is when B-Boy started becoming a regular, and John wanted to put B-Boy with us because of me being from Cali. So it's like, hey, I bring in B-Boy. And the High Five name came up really when, what was it? I think it was Johnny Cashmere, Trent Acid, and Ian Knox. They took a trip to Amsterdam. And on their trip, they were just throwing out these names. And they came up with the name High Five. And then, you know, the whole Roman numeral V thing, that was all them. They came up with it. And then, you know, then we had Nate join us. And, yeah, it was great. I loved being part of it. And then we had our buddy Chad Henry, who's a scout for the Detroit Lions. He's the one that got us all those Detroit Lion jerseys.
All right.
You know, so it was No, it was cool, man. It was cool. Like, we had a great time doing that, man. It was, it ended way too quickly. And to have it build up to the Cage of Death, you know, and have, like, a war game style Cage of Death, it was, yeah, dude, it was awesome. That it was, even that match, that match, in my opinion, goes down as, like, the best Cage of Death match ever.
Oh, yeah.
Given all,
I don't think
you know,
there's a
all
fan that disagrees.
Yeah, given all of us who are in the match and the possibilities of everything that could have gone wrong, but everything went like precision, man. It was like, all right, he got his spot. Okay, boom, 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 boom. And I'll never forget being backstage after that match and all of us just sitting there. And it was like, you know, can't believe we just pulled this off. So
yeah.
It was great being part of that, man.
Yeah, it was definitely a phenomenal match. And, definitely goes down as the best Cage of Death. I don't think it can be topped. I mean, the elaborate setup and everything. I mean, they even got New Jack in there, which, I mean, if you knew the type of guy Zandig was and the type of guy New Jack was, it was never going to work. But they got him in there and made it work for at least that show. I think they had him in one more show before that bumped heads. But, yeah, it was perfect.
Exactly, man. And it was and the great thing about the High Five, too, in my opinion, too, is that all of us were different. We were all different, you know. Nowadays, and this is just my opinion, is just a lot of guys, they all look the friggin' same. Maybe it's because I'm not around as much as I used to. Maybe it's because I don't know a lot of the guys. Like, I used to, because there's a lot of young guys now. But everybody friggin' looked the same. You know, everybody has the same kind of tights. Everybody's wearing kick pads. Like, everybody looks the same. And the one thing about, like the High Five, and even CZW back then, everybody, like, we all looked different. We all didn't look like one another. And I know I'm just being biased because I knew everybody back then and everything, but, like, that's what I thought was cool. And the other thing, too, about the High Five was, even though I was, quote-unquote, the leader, like, all of us were good on our own. Like, there wasn't, like, one guy who was weak or you know, that needed help or it just, we were all good as single wrestlers on our own as well, which I thought, as far as a group mentality goes, is pretty rare.
Yeah, definitely. What was your thoughts on the whole angle where you hung Zandig from the hooks and that thing?
Dude, which one? The first time or the second? Oh, I mean the second time when it was the first time was when Lobo did it, like, at backstage.
Yeah, Lobo did it the first time. Yeah.
Okay. The second time, dude. Yeah. No, that was freaking nasty, dude. That was nasty. And really, the reason that happened was, I can't remember exactly the specifics. At the time, the Athletic Commission came down with some kind of ruling. And I think it had to, maybe it had to do something with XPW, or was, I think it was Angel. Angel bled on somebody in the crowd or in the bathroom, and it turned out to be, like, the commissioner's granddaughter or something. All I know is, like, the commission had banned light tubes or whatever it was. And our match was advertised as, like, this hardcore fans bring the weapons kind of thing. And if you read the message boards about the match, dude, the anticipation for the match and people were, this was during the summertime. So everybody was putting us against, like, what Zandig had done with, like, Wife Beater the year before. Like an I Quit match and everything.
Yeah.
He and Lobo and those insane matches they were doing. Those things now we weren't allowed to do. And so John just basically was like, dude, there's no way we're going to live up to the hype. There's no way. So John's solution was, hey, I'm going to hang myself in the ring. and that's what we're going to do. And so that's what it was. So, you know, right before the match, all of a sudden, like, you hear this, you know, this commotion backstage, and all that was there were guys on the balcony and they pushed one of those panes of glass onto the floor to make, you know, so backstage you hear this crash, and then here comes the High Five kicking John's ass to the ring, and we make Wax, we beat up Wax and have John, you know, have him hang in the ring, and that's what it was. And depending on who you are, either, I mean, No one disputes the fact that it was friggin', it was pretty grotesque, and that it was pretty hardcore. And did it go a little bit too far? Yeah, probably did. No, probably. It didn't go too far. But the thinking behind it, I think, was, you know, rational enough, but there was no, like, how to deal with the fallout of it. And, I mean, you know, John and I could have gone out there and put on a match, and but for some reason, yeah, John, he wanted to do that because he thought we couldn't live up to the hype of what people thought it was going to be, given the fact that, you know, the Athletic Commission put out all, you know, you can't use this, you can't use that, you're not allowed to do this. And, yeah, and that's why you got the hanging in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was definitely shocking. I mean, that's what they were going for, so it kind of worked. But, it turned a lot of people off. And, I mean, these are the same people that were comfortable with Weiss Beater Zandig I Quit match, so.
No, you're exactly right. And I think that the month before, I tried to do, like, the State of the Union address kind of thing in the ring. And, it didn't work, but essentially it was, you know, we can't please you guys. Either we're going too far or we're not going far enough. And and that's exactly what it was. It was just, oh, now you guys crossed the line. Well, okay, who says, you know, which one of you says, you know, tells me where the line is? That's
all
really
right.
What it was. You know, tell me what's, you know, what's too far. And, it was too friggin' far. But, you know, people still talk about it to this day, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I know there were some people that were, it turned some people off. I mean, granted, not that like CZW was PG or anything like that, but if there really was anybody there with their kids, they definitely weren't coming back.
Right.
And the one thing I always said about CZW too, at least, the summer before, dude, was that, for some reason, for a hardcore fed, there was always a bunch of girls in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they loved the way, like, the back seats look and everything. And like CZW had just this ultimate, this awesome female following. After that, they were just like, oh, forget this. I don't care how hot these guys look. I'm not coming to see this kind of crap.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because visually, you know, it's grotesque and everything like that, but probably overall safer than a lot of other stuff you're doing with the surgical hooks and someone who knows what they're doing rather than glass falling.
Oh, totally. And what's funny, too, is if you look at it, as far as blood goes, the only blood that was cut was from John's head. It wasn't like he was gushing blood from, like, where the hooks were. It was from his head.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really one of these things. I mean, over, 8 years now since that's happened, you know, it's like that game Telephone. Now it's been built up to, like, you know, John's probably on meat hooks with, you know, his back filleted open and just, like, blood everywhere. You know, it's just, but, yeah, dude, it was, in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have done it. Probably should have just gone out there, done our match. Granted, everybody may have been a little bit disappointed that it wasn't as violent or as hardcore as they wanted it to be. But, you know, it definitely would have been some guy. It wouldn't have, you know, sent people home, you know, with a bad taste in their mouth like the hanging thing did.
All right. You wrestled Gage a lot, you know, especially when you had the title. What was your thoughts on working Gage?
I loved working Gage. If you don't know Nicky, like, dude, he's super intense. That's the one thing, like, Nicky, dude, like, his intensity, bar none, no one has that. I don't care if you're in the WWE or if you're, you know, working some flea mart, you know, kind of thing. His intensity, like, he'd go out there, dude, he was friggin' intense, man.
Yeah.
And, he would keep that. He would keep that intensity going through the whole entire match. That's something that you can't teach somebody. Like, dude, that's the one thing that always. And he was super talented. He really was. But he, the first match I had with him, I'm trying to remember what the first. Yeah, he. I think it was no. Actually, it was a match I had with he and Justice Payne. The he was doing something. I forgot what he was doing, but he gave me one of those forearm shivers right to my friggin' nose and, like, broke my nose.
Wow.
You know, and he kept going. It was like, you know, in wrestling, there's no time for sorry. So, like, he just boom, 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 boom. And Nikki, I love Nikki just because of the fact of when I was gone from CZW for a little while and I would show up every periodically, Nikki was the first one. He would see me and he'd go, "Hell yeah, you're back, man," with that intensity. "Hell yeah, you're back. Yeah, yeah." Like, he'd get super excited because he remembers how it was. Like, when the back seats were there and Flash was there. And, like, he loved that era. And to see someone like me back there, like, he friggin' loved it. And to work him, people can complain, like, he was too stiff. I don't think he was stiff, the boot that he would do, the face wash, dude, that thing looks like it's taking someone's face off. But, I mean, dude, it was nice and light. Like, Nikki, as far as a worker goes, if he was able to get his mind right, there's no reason why he couldn't have been, like, in WWE. That intensity, you can't teach that kind of intensity, man. And, he had that in spades, and that was great.
Right. What was your thoughts on, what happened? You know, we end up robbing the bank. And
it is what it is. I mean, I really can't comment on it because, I really don't know what happened. I just know what, like, everyone else has heard. I mean, I just know, like, he had some problems before because he and I had spoke about it a little bit. And, once he gets out, he'll get his life together, or he is getting his life together. But it is what it is. It's just, it's unfortunate. And the only good thing I can say about it is, like, he's young. So when he gets out, it's not like he's going to be some old man. And he has a chance and he has time to get his life in order and do what he wants to do. And I wish, Nikki nothing but the best. But like I said, he was one of those guys, dude, that when you wrestled him, he would bring your A-game up because of that intensity. If you were slacking off, man, he would give you one pop in the face or, he would bring you up. And you had to be that intense and you had to get that going. And like I said, you can't teach that. And, I hope Nikki's doing well. And from what I've been told by people, he's doing good. And he has a good outlook.
Good.
And, waiting to get out.
What was your thoughts on the Pandora's Box gimmick?
it was what it was. I don't think it ever was given a chance. Well, at least in the beginning, from what I was like, because I know they started out with, like, guys in hoods, like it was Flash and B-Boy under hoods, and then come to find out, like, it's this girl or whatever. It was just never given a chance, I don't think. It just got lost in the shuffle like a lot of things do. And it was fun. It was fun to be back with, like, Flash and B-Boy. But, if I'm going to be honest, like, if you see the way I was working back then, too, dude, my heart wasn't in it. It just wasn't. And that's not fair to the guy who I was working, because it just... Yeah, man, it was just, like I said, it was what it was. It was fun while it lasted, but I can't even remember why, we stopped. Oh, did Flash? No, I don't even remember why it stopped. It just kind of did.
What was your, how do you remember the match you had with Zandig, which ended up in the whole Teddy Hart situation?
What do I remember about that match? I just remember him hitting me with those damn tack strips. Those things freaking hurt. That was the match that John got knocked out, huh? Yeah, he got knocked out with the powerbomb. Okay. People blame me for knocking John out, okay? Because I did the running, sunset flip powerbomb to the outside through a table to John. If you go back and watch it, I set the table up long ways That's the way I've always set up the table for that. For some reason, John wanted me to do it the other way. He wanted me to do it horizontal. And I did what he asked. So when I went to do the power bomb, there was nothing there breaking his fall, and his head hit the friggin' concrete.
Right.
When it happened, I didn't know. Because, you know, doing that, for, it still, I mean, legitimately hurts me doing that. So I was selling it. And Hartog, I think Hartog was the referee. He told me, I think he even said, like, John can't move. He can't move. And I had no idea. And Teddy was supposed to do a run-in. And I think we, it was just, hey, tell Teddy to get out here. Tell him to get out here and do the run-in. Then John was able to get up. And that whole thing, then Teddy comes in and John drops Teddy on the tacks and gives him the, or he scratches his head on those carpet tacks, whatever they were. That was the one thing about John, was like, he wouldn't call a spot. It's like, all right, you're going into this. You know, and
he just put you there.
Yeah, it's like, all right, there you go. You just go with it. Teddy came in and did it, and John, and I think Teddy got on the mic when he wasn't supposed to, just being how Teddy is, Teddy Hart is, and, you know, he's talking, and whatever happened, and then John what did that mother effing bomb thing to him, and
right.
And then he got the scratch to the back of his head, so, it was what it was, but, yeah, John was legitimately knocked out when Teddy came out there. It was on the fly, and, I remember Teddy's dad wasn't too happy about that. He could tell that John really
got the scar.
Teddy was
What was
cool,
your favorite
though.
Moment
I got
in CZW?
What was my favorite moment in CZW?
Yeah.
Sorry, what was that?
Yeah, your favorite moment in your time in CZW.
My favorite, you know what, my favorite moment, honestly, when I think about it, was when I did that, the stupid speech, and,
when you came back?
When I came back, and everybody, because no one,
everybody
John just told
ring.
Me, yeah, first of all, I wasn't even supposed to be at that show, and, when I showed up, John looked at me, goes, what are you doing here? I said, I heard there was a wrestling show going on. He's like, okay. He goes, well, I don't have any. We weren't going to use you today. I was like, yeah. I mean, if you can fit me in, you can fit me in. If not, you know, I understand. You weren't expecting me. He was like, okay. And then he came up to me and said, hey, main event's going to happen after that. You'll come and make the save, and then just say something on the mic to, you know, have everybody go home happy. You know, because they'll be happy to see you. Okay. So when I went out there, I wasn't planning on saying all the things that I said.
Yeah.
When I went out there and said all those things, it literally was just me getting, you know, all the stuff off my chest. And then all of a sudden, everybody started coming out. And that was just like a good, it was just a good feeling having all those guys in the ring. And legitimately, when I said, you know, there are no egos here. Everybody's here for the company. Everybody's here to look out for one another. We really were. Like, everybody was for, you know, the company. Everybody looked out for one another. And it was just a great feeling having, like, all of us together united. So, I mean, to me, that sticks out. I know, like, a lot of people probably don't even remember it. Or, when they think about, like, CZW moments, like, that doesn't register with them. But, yeah, for me, that was the same night, yes, CM Punk wrestled Payne. So, Punk was there, and Punk, you know, said something nice to me, you know. That sticks out in my mind. And the other thing that sticks out was when I went over for the heavyweight title the first time. Because keep in mind, dude, I was only supposed to be in CZW one show. That's it. I wasn't supposed to become a regular. And I did, and then to have, and I was in CZW only, what, like 4 months at the time, 5 months maybe, and then they put the strap on me. That really, you know, did something, that really, you know, my confidence was like sky high at the time, and to have that happen, and to have like, you know, the company have that confidence in me was great. Granted, I only had the belt for like a show because Kane went over on me again, but and that, and also KJ Death 4, when I went out there to wrestle Kane, dude, you could feel it and had like this big fight atmosphere, in my opinion, because it was built up really good, which you don't really get that a lot in indies. But it just had this like freaking fight. It just had this fight atmosphere going on, and that was cool.
The first thing you were talking about too with the speech, that was definitely like a great example of I've had a lot of guys on here over the years, past couple of years, and everybody refers how CZW used to be a family, and it's not like it used to be in this and that. And that was like a real like a moment where you definitely got that feel. And as a fan, I mean, that was like, you know, you had like a pride, like this is our company, like this is what we show up for, this is our guys right here. And you know, you got that kind of like loyalty feeling. Like overall, it definitely had like a, you know, real close tie in. It wasn't just like a show you were at. This was like your fed, you know.
Yeah, no, that was the thing, man. It was a family, and that's when I do go back and I see the guys. That's the one thing that they all tell me, and they're just like, dude, it's not like how it was. And you know, it's like, you know, like even Joker and Sabian, it's like, dude, you know, it'd be great to have you back or have Flashback, you know, like, dude, it's not that family atmosphere anymore. It's not like, I mean, like back then, dude, there were no like cliques. You'd walk in the locker room and we were all sitting around one another. When I go back there now, you got your cliques. You got your clique over here. You got your clique over there, you know. It was just, in my opinion, really when the family thing started not to happen anymore was, and this is no knock on these guys at all, but like, when, John started bringing in guys like Super Dragon and Excalibur, and then he got the Canadians like, Steen and those guys. And again, this is no knock on them because they didn't know who we were. I understand it, but at the same time, the way I was taught, you go and you shake everyone's hand in the locker room. Those guys at the time, they didn't do that kind of stuff. They made it very well clear, hey, we're by ourselves over here.
Yeah.
Again, that's no knock on those guys. It's not to say that they're bad guys or anything like that, because they're all great guys. It just, and from what I've been told, like I remember because Adam Flash, he finally went up to like Steen and Frankie the Mobster and Sexy Yeti. And he was like, dude, I don't know how you guys do things, you know, where you're from, but here you shake hands and you say hello. You know, it's about being polite and being respectful. And after that, like, you know, Steen and those guys and Frankie, they all came up apologizing. Hey, sorry, I didn't know. In fact, what was it, a year ago when we had some WrestleFest thing out here in L.A. Kevin Steen was there, and Kevin saw me, and he came up and, hey, man, how's it going? Like, you know, he still remembered me, and now he's a friggin' superstar.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but he came up and he's just, hey, man, how's it going? You doing well? I'm like, yeah. You know, so that's, and then also when the backseats left, that's when it all, the whole family thing started, not, you know, you started having like sides. And it sounds a lot worse than how I'm bringing it. It's not to say that it was something really bad, but that's when it started happening. When people start leaving, you know, that's when it started not having that, you know, all for one feeling.
Sure. Speaking of the backseats, obviously, you know, Trent passed away. What were some of your memories of Trent, you know, over the years and stuff? Because I know you must have gotten close to him. You were in the same group with him, and he was one of those guys, anyone he was anywhere near got close to him, you know? So,
yeah. Trent, no, man, I love Trent. He was a great guy. He was one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life. And at the time, what a lot of CZW fans didn't know was we all pretty much like lived with one another. I lived in the house with Ian Knox, and D-Boy like would stay over and stay there, and Flash would stay there. And then across the street, Johnny Cashmere had a place, and Trent would stay over there. And then at the same time, there was this bar that we all worked at too. So you right. know, we were all really close, and we were all hanging out with one another all the time. And Trent, he would always mess with me. I remember one time, we were drinking. It was right when I came back after the attack thing, when I came to the first tournament of death. I'm mm-hmm. drinking a beer, and Trent comes over and, you know, does that thing where you take the bottom of a beer and you just hit the top. So the suds come out of it or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. so I drink my beer, and he runs over like a little kid, and he hits the top, boom, and then all this the foam starts coming up, and he looks at me and goes, "Hey, why don't you stick your thumb in it to stop it?" I was like, "Oh yeah, you're a funny guy, dude." Like he was a great, good-hearted guy that that just, you know, got mixed up in some bad stuff, and you know, in fact, I mean, I think about him all the time. But he was super mm-hmm. talented too. That's the one thing. Anybody, even people who didn't like him or disliked him, you couldn't deny the fact the guy was friggin' talented. You know, he knew how to do everything. Like he was great at like coming up with a match and putting it together, coming up with finishes and yeah, man, it was just he should have been in WWE. He should have. It just sucked out. I mean, we all miss him and everything, and he, in fact, originally, when I wrestled, I'm trying to remember who I wrestled. I think it was that Cage of Death 6 or Cage of Death 7, when I wrestled Flash and Chaos.
Okay.
For the belts. Originally, that was supposed to be Trent, and Trent was supposed to go over on me for the belt. Because we were building up to me versus Trent, and then Trent and Johnny, or Johnny had already left, and then Trent up and left.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, John Zandig, he loved Trent. Like, he thought that kid was talented beyond belief. He would tell me all the time, like, he would get calls as far as, like, you know, like in Japan and in Germany, like, they want Trent. They always wanted Trent to wrestle. Mm-hmm. And
sure.
Yeah, he was supposed to be CZW Heavyweight Champion, but it never happened, and I wish it did.
Yeah. If you had like five matches or so that like if you were to give a compilation to somebody's your favorite matches, what do you think those matches would be?
Those matches would be I don't know, because I hate everything I do, dude. I nitpick every little thing I do. A lot of the matches that I consider like my favorite are it's not necessarily because of what was done in the match, but because of the circumstances leading up to it or what the match meant. Like me versus Mondo and Epic. Like no one talks about that promotion at all except for that one match.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that one match. And, it was that match, me versus, and again, they're death matches, so a couple of these are death matches, but it's because of what led up to it. Me versus Supreme at Go Funk Yourself. That whole ECW, XPW thing at the Heat Wave happened like a week prior. So, you know, we kind of felt like the eyes of the world were on us, and they probably weren't. No one was looking at us. But we felt it at the time, so we wanted to go out there and work our butts off and show them, you know, what's what. And when Supreme and I went out there and did that match, to this day, like, hardcore wrestling fans talk about that match. Because I get asked about that match a lot. And I just remember, like, Sabu, a week later, he was at the XPW offices and he was talking to me. And he was just like, "No, that was a great match." You know, he goes, you guys... And that's when I got you got to learn to not do everything. You know, you need to leave them wanting more speech. And but he's like, "I'll tell you what, kid, though, you got balls, man. You got balls." He goes, "It was a good match." And you know, he was just telling me, like, he liked it. The third match would be when I came to CZW versus Payne. When I told you before, like, for two guys who didn't know each other at all, knew nothing about one another, and then given my circumstances on what happened with XPW, that match means a lot to me. because I was only supposed to be in CZW one show. And pain was supposed to go over on me, and you were never supposed to hear from me again. And for some reason, just everything clicked that night, and I did really well. And, yeah, that match, trying to remember. The other two matches, it's hard to say because I know after I get off the phone talking about this, I'm going to be like, oh, that match, and that match. But, like, I've had some great matches that no one's ever seen, man, unfortunately, because given where, like, when I wrestled Chris Daniels out here in pitch black, man, in front of, like, 10 people. But it was a great match. And Chris Daniels came up after me going, yeah, you know, good job. I didn't think you could work, but, damn, you can work. It's those little things that that happened to me throughout my career, the little pats on the back from guys I respect that mean the most to me. Because unfortunately, like, I got labeled, and it's not a bad thing, but I got labeled this guy who does hardcore stuff. So when I do go out there and I'm able to put on a wrestling match, you know, it surprises some people, which I don't know why, but, you know, the matches I've had with B-Boy I'm proud of, Frankie Kazarian, like, matches no one's ever seen, unfortunately, but, you know, they were really good matches that showed that I don't need to use a chair or a table. Right. So,
is there anything that you wish you would have accomplished in your, you know, your time in wrestling?
I wish I could have gone to Japan. I always wanted to go to Japan, and there was a couple times in CZW and also in XPW when I was told that it was going to happen. And for whatever reason, things just didn't pan out and didn't work out. I really wish I could have gone to Japan. That was the one thing I wish I could have done. When I first started wrestling as a kid, you know, I had like five goals, silly, stupid goals. But they were just like, one was, you know, to become a champion anywhere, to have a belt. Two was to be in a video game for some strange reason. I just always wanted to be in a video game because I always played wrestling video games. And I got to do that. And then three was to wrestle at the LA Sports Arena because that's where I saw Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect. And I got to do that with XPW. And then just to be able also to get paid, actually, like, to get paid to wrestle, that was pretty freaking cool, man. That it was when I sat back and really thought about it. Did people pay me and fly me to wrestle, fly me out of state, fly me, put me up in a hotel, and they pay me pretty well. Like that was a goal that got to happen. And the fifth thing was just just to get. And this sounds superficial, but to be recognized, like to be in a store and get recognized. And that happened. And, like, those are my five stupid little conceited goals that I had as a kid when I first started. And I got to meet all those goals. I really wish I could have gone to Japan. And I really wish I had a chance, which I'm gonna start wrestling for a promotion called Mex Pro out here in California. But the ability to go out there and, I'm glad people know who I am, or people, you know, say, hey, I like this match you had with Supreme, or the Seth match with this guy. But, you know, it's very rare I get someone that comes up to me and goes, hey, I like that match you had, and there was no death match aspects to it. I want to be able to go out there and show people, hey, man, you know, I wasn't taught this. I was taught how to wrestle like this. And that's my goal right now, is just, you know, I've proven myself I can be a tough guy and take the pain, but I want to go out there and just wrestle. And that's what I hope people will take away when they're like, hey, you know, you can actually work. And a lot of the boys know it already. It's just hopefully, you know, some of the fans will start realizing it as well.
Sure. Are you going to stay more or less strictly like a West Coast type thing right now? Or?
For right now, yeah. It's just that. I mean, to tell the truth, like, I never meant to stop wrestling. You know, because I would get asked, like, hey, do you still wrestle? I never meant to stop, but I had a ton of injuries. And at the same time, like when I left CZW that first time, after dropping the belt to Ruckus, they wanted to bring me back and put me in those ultra violent underground stuff that they were doing.
Right.
And John and I had a talk, and I just said, dude, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I need to take some time off because my head and my heart just weren't into it anymore. I really missed being, every time I missed being away from my family, I missed my daughter. I always told myself I would never be one of these parents that wasn't around for birthdays or, you know, Christmas and everything and that kind of stuff. And really that initial, was it the second time I left CZW and I went to PWU, it all had to do with, really, I couldn't do a show because it was my daughter's birthday.
All right.
And it got turned into an angle. But I promised myself I would never be one of those guys, because that's the one, if you talk to any guy, any wrestler, any guy who works, whether it's, you know, a guy from WWE or even an independent guy, like, a lot of these older guys, like, their biggest regret is when it comes to their kids and they weren't around for certain things. And I didn't want to be like that. So, like I said, I didn't mean to take time off. It was just, I had injuries that I was nursing, and then I'd get asked, hey, can you wrestle here? Can you wrestle there? And I would turn it down. And there comes a point where you keep turning people down, they're just not going to call anymore. And that's
right.
What happened.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know? And so now, I mean, I have a brand new, beautiful baby daughter. She's 11 weeks old. And
that's awesome.
Seeing her and my other daughter, who's 12, it's like, yeah, you know, something. I want to start wrestling again. I feel good. I'm all healed up. And you know, if other things come from me wrestling in MexPro, great. That's awesome. But I mean, it's not going to take away, you know, hopefully, maybe, you never know, maybe I'll go back to CZW, do a show here or there, you never know. As far as I know,
right.
I'm good with everybody, the management there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know. Right now, I'm just taking it one step at a time, and MexPro has a show coming up, I believe it's on the 31st of September, and I'll be there working. And, yeah, man, just right now, it's baby steps, just getting back into it and having fun again. I just need to have fun again. At the end, dude, I wasn't having any fun. I hated traveling. The only time I had fun was when I was around the guys, when I was with the boys, and when I get to wrestle. But after that, dude, it was just, I was miserable, like being by myself in a hotel room or, you know, being in a car driving 5 hours by myself. You know, it was, we'll see what happens, but that's the plan right now, wrestling MexPro and just having some fun, putting on some good matches and taking them there. Like I said, you never know. Maybe I'll go back to CZW for a show someplace else. But, yeah, it's up in the air, man. We'll see.
Cool. I think that's about all I got. Thank you so much for all your time. It's been great.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure, man. No, thanks. I enjoyed it, dude. You know, thanks. You know, I know this sounds corny, but, you know, thanks for remembering me.
it's
nice
not a problem.
You know.
Is there anything else you want to, you know, put out there or plug or anything?
No, man. I mean, if anybody, you know, is looking out or looking for me or anything like that, you can find me on Facebook. It's under Billy Messiah. Same thing on, like, on Instagram, Billy Messiah. You know, unfortunately, I'm one of these freaking doting dads, so if you're expecting to see, like, wrestling pics or me talking about wrestling, sorry, it's usually about my kids, man. like I said, just right now I'll do MexPro. Check them out. They got some they've already had a couple shows. They're doing really well. And, I'm looking forward to just getting back out there and working and seeing the guys. And, and talking to, you know, people like you. And, again, I appreciate, you know, you taking the time and actually, like, asking me questions about stuff I did, like, 9 years ago. It's just weird, you know. But, man, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome, man. So have a good night, man. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, dude, next time, whenever you want me to, just let me know, and I'll be there, man.
All right. Great. Thanks, man.
All right. Anytime. Have a good one.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye.
Night. So there you go. That was the Messiah. Oh, man. Almost 2 hours of talk. I mean, just phenomenal stuff. You know, it was during the time where CZW was CZW. As you know, we go over this with many, many guests of, you know, it's not the same as it was and everything like that. I mean, that's from the time where, you know, it got me hooked as a fan. You know, between 2001 and 2012, I attended almost every show, had just a handful of shows missed. And that's the type of thing that kept you coming back month after month, you know, what Messiah and those guys were doing out there. So, I mean, love to talk to those guys, especially, you know, back from that era. And that's that. I'm going to take a break, come back, run down some of the, all of the first week of football and, you know, my picks like I did last year. And I'll give you guys my fantasy football team, too, because I did a whole draft last week. And, you know, so going to go ahead and do that and be back in a minute. All right. Let me see what I got here.
This hip-hop right here, duck down. I know all y'all young boys don't know what the fuck this is, but I'm gonna bring it back to life. Let's get it. How many? I'm not gonna allow any. Body that can try me, I'm wild, you crowd friendly. I'm probably on the molly that loud and wild henny. Who better? Nobody. Like bitches that's wild skinny. I shit on dudes, move all the bowels in me. I'm battle rapping like Rabbit from 8 Mile in me. Yeah, but I'm from Philly, I come from a wild city. Since a child, they was like Shorty Vile, his style gritty. Now I walk around with the 40 cow simmy. If this beef rip the piece, that could make a cow simmy. You guessed it, I'm not the one to mess with. I could grant it if you got a death wish. I'm finger fucking the gun, the trigger getting sexually molested. Get the message, not Twitter, nigga, I'm reckless. I get rid of niggas spitting stuff like this, so how many MCs must get this, yo?
How many MCs must get this? 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 These niggas must get this.
Every song I drop, they call it a diss record. Cause the bar's so hard that rappers feel disrespected. I'm the truth, prick, just accept it. You can never call my bluff like your phone got disconnected. I picked your bitch up and stripped her naked. She got my dick erected, I put on the Magnum so my dick protected. I made her come so many times I broke a freaking record. Man, I had her wet as the Niagara. I popped the molly, but she probably thought it was a Viagra. The beer was more than soup, you would think a waterproof. When I beat, she came quicker than a quarter note. I pound and put my sons and my daughters down shorty throat. Every song that I record is through. When I rhyme a rap, cats be like, let me sniff a line of that. Ain't nobody got time for that. They be saying, Lord Jesus, it's a fire. Hey, time I rap.
How many MCs must get this? 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 These niggas must get this.
These rap cats better play dead. Cause if I snap and kill you on the track, you gon' stay dead. I got a hot flow, I jumped on Picasso. And niggas telling me that I sound better than Jay did. Yo, I say punchlines that's unforgettable. So me dissing you will make your life miserable. What you trying to get into? I ain't hospitable, but I spit at you in hospital. Now they admitting you and I see you. Cause you in critical condition. Now listen to these next two syllables. Fuck y'all. Your fucking balls is pitiful. If I ain't rap, cats wouldn't have shit to listen to. Even your fans getting sick of you. They be twitting you like, damn, I ain't bullshitting bullshit on you. I don't care if we get along or not. You pop shit, then you gon' get dissed in the next song I drop.
How many MCs must get dissed? 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 How many MCs must get dissed?
All right, I'm back. It was really good to, you know, I didn't even watch Raw this week. I kind of skimmed a little bit of it, so I have nothing to say about that. I'm honestly kind of hitting one of those strides, you know, if you listen to the show, I kind of get this, like, hot and cold with Raw, with the WWE as a whole. Raw, I'll kind of get into it for a little while, and then I'll just fall off and, like, barely, if even watch it, if, you know, for a couple weeks to a month or so type thing. And I kind of get that feel right now, like I'm just not really into it. I am trying to really, really turn my physical game up as much as possible, as, you know, you're hearing week in and week out. So I'm kind of focused a little more on that. So, you know, if I do hit the, and this week I didn't hit the gym on Monday night because it was the Labor Day thing, which, you know, again, you know, I just kind of got to pat myself on the back a little bit, 8 weeks sober on Monday. And, you know, normally it'd be Monday would be just drinking until Tuesday hurt like a motherfucker. But, no, I just kind of chilled out. Didn't go to the gym, but either way you look at it, you know, still a victory considering what I normally would have been doing on that day. You know, so coming off that, actually, I guess I'll go into real quick. Saturday I did my second week in a row doing a 5K, and a 5K race, I should say, because, you know, just running a 5K is a different ball game. So did a 5K race this week. I did it in Barnegat. It's like a town over, two towns over type thing. This one was by the bay, and it was humid as a motherfucker. If you remember from the week before, I did it in Lacey, which is where I'm at, and that was, I ran a 24 minutes, 7 seconds. This one, and I came in 80th overall, out of like 350 something or something like that. This one was a lot harder on me, on my lungs and everything, because it was just, like I said, humid as hell by the bay, and crazy because you run down this long road they got you running on, and the wind's hitting you in your face going, and you loop back coming in the other direction, and the wind's hitting you in the face still. So it's that crazy by the water shit where, like, you're not, like, the wind's not behind you at some point. Like, it's hitting you, this hot, thick air is hitting you dead in the face while you're trying to run and catch your breath. So it was rough. I know this sounds like a bunch of excuses and stuff, but I ran slightly slower. I ran 24 minutes and 25 seconds, which overall on the whole race was, I came in 37th. So, you know, a lot closer to the top. You know, Lacey was a bigger field, and I thought it really attracted a lot of serious runners, a lot more serious runners. So, you know, I did very good for myself, though, considering, only lost, you know, well under a minute as far as, you know, slower time. But, man, my lungs were fucked up running that shit. So, but, yeah, like I said, 2 weeks in a row. Sunday, I'll run my third week in a row doing a 5K race. This one's in LBI, Long Beach Island. So, again, probably going to have the wind in my face going and coming, all the whole shit. Hopefully, it won't be as humid Sunday morning. It's going to be a long, crazy-ass day. I'm beyond hyped for football season. Tomorrow, the football season starts. My oldest daughter also turns 10, so it's a big day. And then, you know, they got the game that night, and then Sunday, it's on like a motherfucker. But I'm going to be up early running a 5K race, finish doing that, got to keep myself busy doing whatever I'm going to do. I'm going to get the jalapeno poppers going on Sunday, the whole nine, and then 4 o'clock game, my Niners is on. I can't even contain myself as far as this shit goes. I'm beyond hyped for football. So it's been too long. This shit takes, like, you know, the seasons go and everything like that, but then, like, the last couple weeks before football season, it seems like it takes, like, a whole another couple months. It's brutal. So finally here. Really, really looking forward to it. And hopefully all that energy and all that enthusiasm and shit I have, I'll be able to carry it in that race in LBI. Maybe even, you know, break my best time from 2 weeks ago. So it'd be nice. You know, hopefully the humidity is down and I could really, really go in there, see what's up. All right, so let me just run these picks down real quick. You got Baltimore at Denver tomorrow night. Denver's favored by 8.5 over the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens are going in, missing a bunch of players. It's not the same team. It's definitely not. Joe Flacco got signed back for, you know, a ton of money, pretty much despite the rest of the team. You know, a lot of guys weren't able to be brought back. So, of course, Ray-Ray being gone, retired. You know, it's a different look team. You got a lot of youth there. You got a lot of different things going on. I don't think the Super Bowl champions are going to come in and get blown out in Denver week one. So that's why I don't like that 8.5, and I'm going to go with Baltimore on that. I wouldn't doubt that Denver's going to go in and win that game. Peyton Manning having Wes Welker to throw to this year is going to be fucking scary. It's going to be scary. A lot of people are predicting Denver and my Niners in the Super Bowl, so I would not be opposed to it until the Super Bowl, and then I'm going to be opposed to facing Peyton Manning, but our beastly defense is going to give him a problem. Let's get into week one before we shoot for the Super Bowl. So we'll take it one step at a time, but I'd surely love to see my guys back at the big show again. So anyway, I go with Baltimore because they got Denver favored by 8.5, and I think that's a little large, but we'll see. Sunday's games. You got Atlanta and New Orleans. New Orleans favored by 3.5 points. I think New Orleans is going to be a little bit recharged. I don't know if they're going to jump right back to where they were or anything like that. But with Peyton back at the you know, at the coaching job and things, I think the offense is going to look a lot better than it did. Atlanta, I don't have the confidence in Atlanta that some might. I think, you know, they got to the playoffs or whatever, collapsed pretty heavily against us. Sure, of course, I'd like to just give my team all the credit in the world for that win, but in the same token, I mean, they kind of had it and they collapsed and they let us back in the game and let us just run clear over them. That same team is going to have a hard time if these other teams pick up steam, you know, New Orleans and the Bucks and stuff like that. They're going to have a hard time. The division is not going to be as soft as it was last year. So I think this is going to be a little bit of an issue. It's in New Orleans, favored by 3.5. I got New Orleans. Next up, you got Oakland at Indianapolis. Indy favored by 8.5 points. I think Andrew Luck's going to have a beast year. Who the fuck are the Oakland Raiders? I got Indy. You got the Miami Dolphins at the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland's favored by 0.5 point. You know, I had said it last week, and I'll say it again. Cleveland's going to be a surprise team. I really think that. I think that they're going to do some work. They might be – I go with them and Kansas City as teams that might just be on the outside looking in come playoff time. As, you know, maybe somewhat contenders, teams you're looking at, well, this team needs to win and that team needs to lose and this and that, but maybe just miss the playoffs would be my expected predictions for those teams. So I got Cleveland winning this game at home against Miami. Minnesota at Detroit. Detroit's favored by 4.5 points. I got Adrian Peterson starting. You know, just doing what he did last year against Detroit. Detroit's going to have a hard time containing him. So I definitely, I mean, Detroit being favored and everything, I got Minnesota winning that game. You got New England at Buffalo. New England is favored by 10.5 points. This is one of those weird games because Buffalo seems to catch New England slipping. I'd say maybe one out of the two times per year. I mean, maybe not exactly that. But I do remember within the past couple of years being surprised at a Buffalo-New England game where it was just like, oh, shit, Buffalo won? And I'm going to go out on a limb and say whether they win or not, I don't think it's going to be 10.5 right off the gate. So I'm going to say I'm going to go with Buffalo with this one, just at least as far as the spread not being covered. You know, I'm not quite calling for an upset victory. I'm just saying it's one of those, you know, one of those games that has gone upset. So when it comes down to it, I'm not going to give New England 10.5 right off the jump. So I'll go with Buffalo at home. Tampa Bay at the Jets. Tampa Bay's favored by 2.5 points. The Jets are in shambles. The Jets have all sorts of issues. Sanchez is banged up. Smith, he went in through like 3-4 picks in one of the preseason games. They, you know, they're not ready. And if those quarterbacks go in shady like that, you got Darrelle Revis on the other side, and you got Deshaun Goldson. They have what they're calling their no-fly zone over there. The Bucs are going to give the Jets a lot of problems. The Jets fans' woes will begin at home hosting Tampa Bay. So I definitely got Tampa Bay on this one. Kansas City, Jacksonville. Kansas City favored by 3.5 points. Kind of echo exactly what I said about Cleveland. Kansas City is going to be a surprising team. They're going to have Andy Reid trying to more or less rebuild his reputation, even though he consistently brought his team to the playoffs for quite an amount of years. And I hate the Eagles. So despite me disliking them, he still made them pretty successful. Of course, didn't win the big game, but, I mean, you could blame it on a lot of things, not necessarily just him. Alex Smith, dynamite quarterback. He was actually number one ranked quarterback when he got injured for us last year, and Harbaugh just went with the decision to say, all right, yeah, it's Kaepernick's time. And Kaepernick shined so much that he never looked back, which I do not blame Harbaugh for, because, you know, in retrospect now, Kaepernick's a beast. That guy, he's going to be a superstar for years. Barring any injuries, this guy is going to be the man for years. I really, really wouldn't be surprised, and I know it sounds just like an arrogant 49er fan, but I would not be surprised to see Colin Kaepernick win an NFL MVP award before he's done. I really, really wouldn't. I mean, it's just, it's a go-to move to say, you know, it's an easy call to say if they win the Super Bowl, get a, you know, Super Bowl MVP. But let's talk about NFL MVP. I would not be surprised to see him win an NFL MVP before he's done playing football. But anyway, about Kansas City, Alex Smith is going to be awesome over there. Charles is running back. I mean, you're going to have a lot to deal with in Kansas City. And I got to tell you, I mean, we were all over their quarterback and backup quarterbacks. I think we had like six sacks, I want to say, against them in preseason. Their defense was getting into our backfield a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised if their pass rush made some noise too. You know, we had backups in there, you know, guys that weren't as mobile. B.J. Daniels is mobile, but not just not as much, you know, knowledge of the offense or anything. So we had a hard time getting away from their pass rush. So, I mean, if they actually come with a decent pass rush on the defense, you know, shake up the quarterback on the other side of the ball, Alex Smith stays consistent as he's known to be, is consistent. I mean, he may not be, you know, 400-yard passer every game, but he's a guy who doesn't make a lot of mistakes once he gets settled into that offense. You got their running backs doing work. You know, they can definitely make some moves. So anyway, I got Kansas City over Jacksonville easy. Possibly a blowout. Seattle at Carolina. Seattle's favored by 3.5 points. Carolina's got big issues. Big issue. Cam Newton doesn't really have a lot to throw to. He's got a good tight end. That's pretty much where he's going to throw the ball the whole time. Seattle, you know, if people aren't talking about us going to the Super Bowl, they're talking about Seattle going to the Super Bowl. So, and I don't agree with any of those people. But I got to go with Seattle with this one. I mean, their defense is beast. You know, Russell Wilson had a great year last year. I mean, I know we're going into sophomore season. You know, he could have that big slump, but yeah, Marshawn Lynch is an animal. I mean, it's got to go Seattle on this one. Cincinnati at Chicago. Chicago favored by 3.5 at home. I go with Cincinnati on this one. Chicago's got a little bit of a rebuilding phase as well. No more Brian Urlacher, new coach, maybe a little settling in to do. I don't think Cincinnati's world beaters, but in the same token, I think they'll pull this one. Tennessee at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 7.5, and I got the upset of Tennessee taking this game. I think Pittsburgh is going to take a nosedive this year. I really think Big Ben is almost done. I can't imagine this guy is going to be in the league for too many years. I could see a rough season going down for Big Ben and him hanging it up after this year, or becoming a backup somewhere, which I really don't see him settling into. I'd see him hanging it up before I see him sitting on the sideline behind someone. Just my opinion, but, you know, 1 to 2 more years out of Ben. That's it. Either this one and another one, or big off-season decision and I'm hanging it up after this one. That's just, you know, maybe we'll see some resurgence out of him. I don't know. And personally, I think, what's his face? Jesus. Can't even remember his name now. Never mind. Anyway, then we got Green Bay at San Francisco. San Francisco favored by 4.5 points. Got to go with my boys. You want some reasons? All right. Green Bay's run game really has been suspect. Their defense has kind of been suspect as well. You're looking at a defense that's now without Charles Woodson. You're looking at an offense that's now without one of their starting linemen. That's actually the lineman that covers Aaron Rodgers' blind side. So you got to shift the line around a little bit. Definitely opens up some pass rush. And if a team is capable of a pass rush, it's us. You know, we replaced Deshaun Goldson with, Deshaun Goldson ended up going to the Bucs, which I was actually pretty upset about. After, you know, out of anybody that left our team, that was a guy that I was like, shit, man, that was a guy I really liked. But let me tell you something, Eric Reed, that is definitely my next Niner jersey I'm getting. That guy is the truth. Came out of LSU. He's awesome. You watch him fill that safety spot almost seamlessly. He's good. You know, he'll have to learn a little bit more about the defense, but he's going to cause a lot of issues for people coming out of the safety. Then you got, Nnamdi Asamoah added to the team. And the guy isn't relied on to be the entire defense as he was in Philly. So people could talk about him getting burned and he's trash and this and that. All Philly's ever looking for is a player to save the team. And when they don't, and they don't do well, and they do as shitty as everybody else on the field, they blame that player. That's what happens. I mean, look at what they did with McNabb. McNabb was the man for all those years, and then all of a sudden it was like, fuck McNabb, he's making us lose. It's like, dude, the rest of your team is shit too. You had a tight wide receiver and running back. That's pretty much what you're looking at. Your whole defense is garbage, and then you blame a cornerback because he used to be shut down. All I remember is he used to be good in Oakland. It's like, yeah, but where was the rest of your defense good at? Because I have a hard time pointing out the highlights of their careers. So it's whatever. I'll take him for what he is, and we'll see how it, you know, progresses over the season. But we got a lot of things. Anquan Boldin is going to make an impact. Patton, great. Quentin Patton, as a rookie, you watch, he's a speedster, and he's going to fill in the spots that Mario Manningham and Crabtree. Manningham's back in October. Crabtree's back in November. There's spots to be filled right there. And Quentin Patton, you watch, he's going to get a lot of reps. I got him on both of my fantasy squads. And, he's going to be the man. So, anyway, going with my boys. No surprise there, but I had to give you reasons and not just go, my guys, because. So, anyway, Arizona at St. Louis. Both of these teams are going to be horrible, in my opinion. St. Louis is favored by 4.5. I go with Arizona. I don't have a lot of logic and detailed reasons behind that. I'm just doing that. Because of Larry Fitzgerald. Let's go there. Whatever. You got the Giants at Dallas. Sunday night football. and that is the Cowboys are favored by 3.5 points. I'm not fully sure on how to call this. The Giants, they generally win a Super Bowl and then do halfway decent, but not really there for a handful of years before they show up and you know, in the race again. So Eli's always capable of doing something. A lot of different parts of that team is just not fully together. We'll kind of see. But I still don't have any faith in Tony Romo on that side of the ball. Going with the Giants on this one. Then you got your Monday night games. It's Philadelphia at Washington. Washington's favored by 3.5 at home. I'm going to go with Washington on this one, but this is going to be very interesting to see RG3 coming back. RG3's game was very versatile, but in the same token, he had a lot of run that he relied on. To have a knee surgery that easy or that early in his career is going to be a big issue. He's going to have to change his game up and protect himself more. This guy's going to have a 6-year career if he runs the same way he did last year. So those guys are really going to have to protect him. He's going to have to use the run as a smaller option. None of this up-the-middle shit anymore. He can't be scrambling up the middle. He's got to have some kind of sideline in his, you know, in his daylight. He's going to have, you know, something to go off. But the guy's got an arm, too, so he's not just beat without that. He's not a, you know, he's not one of those guys. He's got more than one dimension is what I'm trying to say. But this year is going to define what we have to look at the future for RG3 because it can't be just what he did last year because that'll get him killed. But either way, I don't see any huge positives of the Philadelphia Eagles offense right now. Well, or defense, I should say. Their offense, yeah, Mike Vick's saying, oh, I'm going to run a lot more. I'm gonna make an impact again. I'm going to be scary runny stuff. Like anytime a quarterback goes on record and says, you watch, I'm going to run a lot. Like that's defenses are going to pick up on that and they're going to fucking break that puppy killing son of a bitch. they're going to fuck his world up. So I can't wait to see it. From what they're saying, this coach really wants Barkley in the game. So it's more or less going to be a grooming process. And by next year, Barkley will be starting. So no, fuck Vic up. Anyway, then the last game you got Houston at San Diego. Houston is favored by 3.5 points. Going to go with Houston. San Diego doesn't really have an identity. They're going to have a hard time building themselves into something credible, especially starting off the season against Houston. So we'll see what San Diego shakes out to be this season. But I don't have a lot of hopes or expectations for them. And Houston's going to for their sake, hopefully show up the way that they looked last year and be pretty dominant over San Diego Monday Night Football. So that's pretty much what I got there. Give you a quick rundown on my fantasy squad. I'll just give you the Sports Den one that I'm doing. I got quarterback, I got Russell Wilson. And I drafted Vic Cruz, which is good because every time I see that stupid salsa dance in the end zone, I want to break some shit. Now, I could go, all right, good, fantasy points every time. So, I got a reason why that's okay now. So, that's good. Because previous years, I had no reason I liked that shit. Don't like the Giants. Fucking always in the end zone dancing. It's just more points for them. So, now I get some points from that. I'm all for it. Then I got Danny Amendola, who could possibly be the number one target for Tom Brady. So how could that guy not generate points? My running back is Ray Rice, who I was so surprised. It's a 12-man league. I was able to get him at pick number 8. My first-round pick was number 8, and I was able to end up getting him. So fucking fantastic. So many different things about Baltimore are different. One thing that is consistent is Ray Rice. You got Joe Flacco, of course, but he's going to have, you know, a little bit different cast of characters to throw to, but that running back is going to be, you know, setting up that offense, and Ray Rice is going to be a beast this year, I think. Tight end, I got Jason Witten. Then you got swing position. So there I got T.Y. Hilton from Indianapolis, and I got Quentin Patton from my guys. Kicker Josh Brown. I think his name is Josh. From Giants. I'm reading Jay Brown. So I got the Niners defense. And let me see. On my bench, I got Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, backup running back. I got RG3 as my backup quarterback. I got Gresham. Who's a back? I almost said Jonathan Gresham, backup tight end from Cincinnati. He's starting tight end for Cincinnati, backup on my team. Cordarrelle Patterson from Minnesota, backup wide receiver. Stills from New Orleans, he's a rookie. He's a beastly wide receiver. He had a beastly preseason, I should say. So, you know, as a backup wide receiver, could not hurt. And then I got Dallas's kicker too. So, pretty excited about everything there. Looking forward to that. I mean, that's the Sports Den League. I'm due to, you know, Chef Dube and, Big Nick Russell and all those guys over there. And, you know, definitely looking forward to all this, everything football, big business. So, think what I do want to talk about before I get out of here, because I'm not going to do a whole lot longer. It's been a long show. Last week, my friend Yolanda, she had on the Shiznet, she had Andy Sumner. And I want to play a clip that kind of relates to friend of the show, Black G's. And I just kind of want to, you know, give my thoughts on the interview as a whole after I play. It's like a 3-minute clip. But you kind of get a gist of like the type of dude he is, or the type of feel you got off of this. So listen to this, and then, you know, I'll come back and say what I gotta say, and I'll wrap it up.
Well, I guess speaking of Black G's, he actually sent a question because on Twitter, you know, I'm saying, give me some questions to ask this man. Give me a question or two, and Black G's said, tell him to cut a promo. Laugh out loud.
I mean, this is kind of funny now. I mean, the promos were just always awkward for me because no one gave me feedback on it. But, I mean, if Black Cheese or Stevie needs a promo, I mean, dude, look at Tangle Web. Like, you didn't even notice me out there. I noticed you, and that's the thing that's going to really mess with you. If you're not seeing me and I'm seeing you, like, I can come and go as I please. Like, I'm always watching and judging. Like, I still want to know what's going on in wrestling. Like, the fact I can show up to your show where you're working a match with Aetherian Portal, like, big up to them. They're amazing. And if you don't know them, kill yourself. Like, you have some serious, like, keep an eye on your shoulder. The fact that you're going out there and working matches and I can show up to your show, I can give a flying fuck what happened. Like, for me to hop that guardrail and come at you, no one's going to do nothing. I saw the CCW security. I will split their face with a headbutt. Like, I've been known to do that. You know that. Talk to Corey Catholic. Don't worry about me. Worry about yourself. That's a good, like, that's my problem right there.
Wait a minute. Hold on. This deserves this. That means shots fired. Oh, man. Let me move on to something else.
There's no shot fired because I didn't say burn your boots. And, I mean, Sabian's amazing for what he's done. And, like, to see him on TNA, like, that's awesome. It's nothing but respect for the guy because I loved it. And Conrad, his name was Conrad, right, on there, I believe?
Rashad Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, but, I mean, for me to come to see, like, that show, I've been to other wrestling shows, and the fact that I can hop a guardrail, and, dude, look at your security. It's like, people that want to be wrestlers that are never going to be wrestlers, I will fucking murder them. Like, that's what it comes down to. And the whole Corey Castle thing, like, and why I don't stick to wrestling is I have that anxiety, and when I take Zoloft and I drink, like, that just makes me, like, really hard to focus on what's going on. And leading up to, I think it was TOD5, I got really drunk at one of the wrestlers' house in Philly. And something happened out front, and maybe it was Corey, and I started headbutting the shit out of him, and DJ came up behind me and, like, took me out, and he was yelling at me to cool, and I was like, no, I'm cool, I'm cool. And he let go, and I just ran at him, started headbutting him while they were on the ground, like, so.
Yeah, so that's so the thing is, like, first off, you hear that type of thing, and maybe, like, maybe you're supposed to take the vibe of, oh, yeah, like, he's working us, and, like, maybe he's got some kind of comeback in the future and this and that. Well, until you hear him say, like, you know, many, many times in the interview, I don't want to wrestle. I don't want anything to do with wrestling. I'm done wrestling. I don't care about wrestling. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be in it. I don't want people to look at my videos, take them off of YouTube, this and that. He's a weird cat. He really is. I enjoyed his wrestling. I really did. And I was very, very interested to see what he had to say on this because he had dropped off the scene for so long. And, I had Drew Gulak on who said pretty much the same type of thing that Danny Havoc had said, more or less, like, the dude was socially awkward and he just couldn't handle it and just kind of just bugged out. And, they said it in their ways. I'm just kind of paraphrasing, but, so it was just, it is what it is. But then to hear, like, out of nowhere, he's having an interview, I'm like, oh, well, this is really interesting because, you know, well, shit, I haven't heard anything about this dude. I haven't seen, like, a Facebook page. I haven't seen anything. Like, he came on and it was just like, and he's like, oh, well, I have a Facebook page with one friend, and after this interview, I'm deleting it because I don't want people to know what I'm doing in my normal life anyway. Just weird shit. And then, you know, and on the other side going like, I had a panic attack because I was supposed to wrestle Xavier, and then they told me that Xavier, if I hit him in the face, not Xavier, Excalibur, if I hit Excalibur in the face, he just had dental surgery or some shit that he's going to stab me. And he's like, I was having a panic attack just wrestling the dude because they told me this shit. Like, oh, like, just like weird shit. And then, like, you know, acting like, oh, I wish someone would have noticed me when I was there, but I'm glad that I wasn't noticed. And then he's like, well, they don't have me on the alumni page of the CZW website. Well, fuck them. I don't want to be on there. Keep me off of there now. Keep me off of there. Take me off of the YouTube, this and this and that. I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck. Like, I don't fully understand the reasoning behind him doing it. Partially, like, the message he was trying to give off is kind of like a leave me alone type vibe, but I don't think anyone was not leaving him alone because other than the people who knew he, you know, wrestled in CZW and, you know, enjoyed his work in CZW, I don't think people were, like, clamoring about. I know he had, like, the, you know, big buzz when they were fucking with Drew and, Andy Sumner, and then he came back and he got the pop and everything. He was more or less saying, like, that's all he needs. I get the vibe that he doesn't like Drew. I think, like, the one time he slipped, he said, like, oh, that asshole. But he kind of stayed away from just, like, directly bashing Drew, but in the same token also said that, like, getting the pop over Drew like that after being away for so long was all he needed in his career. That's enough accomplishment for him or something along those lines, but just seemed real bitter. And the same token, showing up to tell you to leave him alone type thing. So I just didn't fully understand what his whole motive was. But, you know, it was interesting enough. If you do want to know what the deal is with Andy Sumner, check out the Shiznet from last week. I'm sure you can find it on their thing. It's Blog Talk Radio and the Shiznet. So it's their last week's episode. And it's a two-part interview because I think Blog Talk cut them off and then they did, like, their second part. So, yeah, check it out. That's that. Other than that, Kyle O'Reilly won the Best of LA Bola. I can't wait to see it. Bola's always awesome. I love Pro Wrestling Guerrilla stuff. Then after that, they formed Rex Ryan looks skinny as fuck now. They formed the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling, which is the Young Bucks, Adam Cole, and Kevin Steen. So a pretty beastly squad right there, and they should definitely be doing some real cool shit in PWG with that squad versus, you know, others and shit. So it should be pretty cool. But they got that. That's about all I got. So give my plugs real quick. Check out Wrestling Soup tomorrow night. WrestlingSoup.com, I believe you can get in there. Stern Nation. Check out Stern Nation before Wrestling Soup. And check out their Facebook page, Stern Nation. And they'll get you from there. The Sports Den, that's on tonight, probably still on right now. You check them out. Again, go to the Facebook page. I got to get these legit commercials down from these people. They're driving me fucking crazy with this plug shit because I can never get website addresses and this and that and feeds and all that correct. So, you know, it's a little harder. Women Love Wrestling, check them out. I think that's about all I got. Check me out next Wednesday, man. I'm going to be going in on some motherfucking football. I'm sure I'll be watching some wrestling between now and then, so that way it still kind of sort of remains a wrestling show. So, yeah, that's we'll do that. And, check me out next week. I'll be here Wednesday. All right? Peace.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill 'em all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Night, this is Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it's a fucked up world we're living in. And people are doing some really bad shit. The TSA is about to start allowing pocket knives and horse shit that's under 2¾ inches back on the airlines. So make sure that when you're packing up with your loved ones, that you're packing a blade just like every other sick, sorry motherfucker that's about to get on the same flight as you. This is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Have a good flight.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over. And
we're taking over. And we're taking over. And we're taking over.